It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Coming up, Google kills yet another service that I use, and by the way, apparently has removed my name from their search results. But believe it or not, this is going to be an exciting show because we're in New York City with Jeff Jarvis and Gina Trevanny, live from New York. It's This Week in Google. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 345, recorded Wednesday, March 23rd, 2016. Live from New York. This Week in Google is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/twig. And by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered right to your doorstep. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Wait a minute, where am I? I'm having a dream that I'm in New York City. This is so cool. Oh, I am in New York City. There's Jeff Jarvis. This is a very realistic dream.
It
Hi,
is.
Jeff Jarvis.
It's good to see you. Welcome
it's great to
New York.
See you. We're in the CUNY studios.
Yes, we are.
And as if this dream couldn't get any better.
We hired a bunch of extras behind us in the CUNY newsroom to make it look real.
But look who's here. Now I'm really having a dream. It's so good to see you,
New
Gina. Fist bump.
We're back together.
And hugs.
So glad you're here on
the
our
whole
turf
team.
This time.
Thank you for coming over the bridge and joining us.
Of
we really
course.
Appreciate it.
I am so thrilled to be here.
Is this nice?
Took 7 years, 6 years. Twig in New York City,
yeah,
baby.
Wow.
I'm all about it. Times Square.
And what's exciting is this is the beginning of something more than just This Week in Google here.
Right. We're going to be doing a New York tech show on the Twit Network from this very space coming up. Sooner than I can bear.
Yeah, pilot soon. Should we? Let's bring in your dean,
the boss,
the reputed boss. Sarah Bartlett has been very much instrumental in this.
Hello,
Dean Bartlett.
Good to see
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi.
So great.
I am thrilled.
And thank you for letting us borrow your team because there's a whole there's camera operators and a director and this is fancy.
I know this is what we do here. It's
really nice.
It's only took us 2 years from the time we. Hatched this idea in Petaluma.
We're so thrilled to be here.
It's serious business.
I'm really delighted that it's going to all pan out.
We're very excited about doing a show from New York City, too.
Work him hard for me, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I heard his schedule. I think I will work him hard now that I know.
That's the idea.
No.
Want our money's worth.
Yes.
All right, well, onward.
Thank you so much. Really nice to see you. This is the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism.
Right.
And isn't it nice?
Really nice. These are some very nice days.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yes. Yeah. Yes,
not
indeed.
Mine, thank God.
Made me proud to be a CUNY graduate.
Yeah,
I'm not
amen.
From the School of Journalism. I was Brooklyn College, but
right.
you know, same university.
It's a wonderful institution.
Yes,
so it's
it is.
A public school.
Yes, we're the only publicly supported graduate school of journalism in the Northeast.
It's fantastic. And these are the students behind us. This is actually the newsroom. So
if you can see very
they're
much
working.
In the,
what are they working on?
Stories, journalism, man.
Is there a newspaper or what is
no,
it?
No. They're working on stories for assignments. And then over there are some of the entrepreneurial students who are working on their businesses. And they've done reporting day and they're back.
There are ghosts in this building, though.
Yes, there are.
This is one of the most famous newspapers in the world. The old New York Herald Tribune was here
until
1966. The newspaper started by Horace Greeley
mm-hmm.
in the 1800s, mm-hmm. and a really great newspaper.
Yep.
So this is kind of a nice
here.
Feeling. There's
yeah.
history here. I
it's
really like
ground.
Being here.
Old media, new
yes.
media.
Yeah. Well, there's some news, and we could talk about that. We want to. Tip our hat to everybody in the chat room. Yes, we can. I can see you. I don't know if anybody else can, but I can see you. And also to our studio people back in Petaluma, little tiny cow town, Petaluma.
Chicken town, isn't it?
I feel like if I can make it here, I'll make it anywhere. So, and of course, Jason Klanth is our producer who's back in the studio. Hi, Jason. Thank you for doing this. We came out on vacation, Lisa and Michael and I, our son and Michael, and we thought, well, that'd be fun to see the place. And this is really going to be great.
It's great. I'm so happy you came up here. I know you're interrupting your vacation.
No. This is fun.
This is cool.
For you guys, anything. Yeah. And afterwards, five napkin burgers, right?
Oh, okay. All right.
Is that okay?
I hear
they have good hamburgers. So tell me about the show that you're going to do from here.
So we have Annie Berman as our new producer at Hired. She's done a great roundup of some of the people we can talk to. We're going to do the same thing we're going to do on Twit and talk about the news and talk about things around New York. But as you pointed out, you can't really go out from Petaluma and interview a chicken. We are in the center.
Wait a minute. There's a big chicken text scene. No, there isn't. No, you're right.
So we are in the center of the universe right here. And tech and media, tech and fashion, startups, finance. So we want to go out and bring people in and talk. And I'm going to try to take Gina's arm and twist it behind her and get her to come in and host too.
This is only my first time here. This is not my last. I'm very excited to pitch in.
You know, while we can cover Silicon Valley pretty well from our studios, it's really nice to have the East Coast and New York. I mean, this is, you know, we were talking about Silicon Alley, which I always thought was a kind of a silly name. And I don't know if Jason Calacanis didn't start it, but he had the Silicon Alley Reporter. It almost felt like we're a little bit of jealousy of Silicon Valley. Oh, well, we've got Silicon Alley. Every town has a little Silicon Valley of some kind.
I mean, locally you use it to refer to a particular area of the city because there just isn't, you know, it isn't tech everywhere.
That's kind
right?
of Soho, but, kind of Chelsea area?
Kind of Flatiron. More. Yeah. Not far from here, actually. Mm-hmm. But maybe it doesn't play as well kind of outside.
And really, when was the last time you said either Silicon Alley or Big Apple in New York?
Big Apple.
Yeah, no, that's true. I never say it. I sometimes see it.
Yes.
You know,
mostly at the tourist stores.
Well,
but we're in Silicon Square, Times Square, center of the universe. Yeah. So.
No, I think this is going to be exciting. And
I'm really glad.
Meanwhile, there is some Google news we could talk about. I think we should probably start with related but not Google news, which is, of course, the Apple news, Apple's event on Monday. At that time, during the event, we thought Apple was going to have to face the Department of Justice the next day in court, that the magistrate judge would be ruling on the FBI's request that Apple help them unlock the phone. Tim Cook obviously thought so, and actually I thought made a very brief but very, I think, eloquent statement saying we never expect to be fighting our country, right. But we feel it's our responsibility. Actually, he said fighting our government. We feel it's our responsibility to our customers and our country, as opposed to the government, perhaps, to stand up to the government and protect their security. And I thought that was really kind of well said.
Yeah, and it played really well. People liked it, right?
Yeah.
It was received well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly thereafter, later that evening, the FBI goes to the judge and says, Your Honor, we don't need to have a hearing.
We think.
We'll defer this till April 5th.
Right.
We think we can hack it. Somebody's stepped forward. The latest news comes from Motherboard, which has been doing really, I think, good tech coverage, very good tech coverage lately. They say that they believe it's an Israeli company. Well, this comes from a Israeli newspaper called Cellebrite, which is an Israeli phone forensics firm. Apparently, while Cellebrite executives, this is from Haaretz, Cellebrite executives would not comment, they indicated they're confident that a completely hack-proof phone has not been invented, and they would eventually be able to unlock any existing system on their own.
So they clearly must have demonstrated they could do it in a similar situation to the FBI.
And the FBI's, you know, they're hedging their bets. They said, if they can't, we'll come back to you April 5th, and we still will ask for this help.
So here's the interesting thing about that to me is, in the world of hacks of things, the ethical thing to do is to reveal to the manufacturer the hack that you used. They're never going to reveal to Apple what they used.
The New York Times had an interesting article talking about that, saying everybody, Google, Facebook, everybody has a bounty. Right. If you find a bug, you could make as much as $100,000 bounty. Apple has said, and I actually like Apple's principled stand, well, we're not going to pay for those. But as the Times points out, maybe that's why companies like Cellebrite hold on to these 0 days and say...
But I'm really asking another question, Leo. What's the ethic in the developer community? If you find a vulnerability, I believe the ethic is you let the company know about it so they can close it.
Yeah, that's definitely the culture. Even in my very small open source projects, like, we had a very clear kind of policy. Like, if you find a security hole, here's a private line that we'll get an immediate response from. Like, if we don't respond within a certain amount of time, and this is just common practice, then you can, you know, reveal it or take it. But yeah, that's generally what you do. But these folks are employed by the government, right? I mean,
well, Cellebrite is a private company,
right? But yes. I'm on contract. I mean, I just assume that
the government will then pay them to use their exploit, right?
But as a technologist,
in other words,
they're making money from holding these exploits instead of giving them to the company. Is that ethical?
No, it's not ethical. I assume that they were employed by the government previous to this,
they've been used before.
Not saying it's ethical. I'm just saying I don't think that they were like, Apple government, I'll go to government. You know what I mean?
No, in fact, it's quite the opposite. They were, well, now the way that FBI suggested this in their court filing was somebody has come to us with a hack.
That's true.
Which would imply that somebody, if it's Cellebrite, would have said, oh, you know, but they have worked with the government before. They have exploits. In fact, on their webpage, it says we can crack iOS 8. 9 is a little bit more troubling,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, 9 is just
But 8 also had encryption, full disk encryption. So it sounds like Cellebrite might have said, hey, you know, called their contact at the Department of Justice, said, hey, we can crack it. Why they didn't come forward sooner is another question.
No, my guess is because they had to try.
Maybe they didn't know, yeah.
I'm guessing that anybody who wanted to do this had to replicate the situation.
And it's not clear that they can do this, right? They're testing this on phones that are in similar states as the phones of the attackers, right? Mm-hmm. Because they won't want to risk deleting data. This is why they needed time, right? So this is all
find it interesting that the Justice Department did blink. If they truly believed that they had the principle behind them, they would have gone ahead in the case and said, no, Apple, you just owe this to us because we're the government, we're doing what's right. Instead, they blinked as well. If we don't need you, we won't ask you to do this.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
It is extraordinary.
Some legal authorities have suggested that if you're going to use the all writs, it is incumbent on you if you have another method.
Oh.
You legally have to use that other method. All writs can be used only if you know there's no other way than to use the all writs.
That might explain it.
Pay attention to me as a judge. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does kind of, you know, give lie maybe to my assumption that the government really wanted a wider precedent than just this phone. If really what they wanted was a wider precedent, it would be unethical, but they could have said, shh, Cellebrite, we like this case. This is a good one for us to go forward with. There's also the possibility they may have gotten advice from people. I think it was the ACLU. It was a Harvard professor who pointed out that the CALEA explicitly says that telephone companies cannot be compelled to write software for the government, to let the government in. They're protected by CALEA. So it may have been that the FBI and the Department of Justice at the 11th hour said, you know, we're not going to win this case. Maybe Judge
better
Pim,
let it go than lose.
Maybe Judge Pim said to them, you know, guys, I'm going to rule against you. Who knows? Maybe we'll know on April 5th if they go back to court. But that's the latest on that. And it's been endless fodder for us, and I think probably in some ways it's a little disappointing that it's gone with a fizzle instead of a bang.
No, I don't think so.
And what happens? So say the hack works and they get into these phones. I mean, at what point? And then what happens? Does Apple hire them to disclose the hack to them?
That's the ethical issue, isn't it?
Right,
I mean, there's a hack
is.
Out there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
that's
it makes Apple look really bad, and you know,
and I
what
presume the government
then?
puts them under NDA to the government.
Absolutely.
Right? Absolutely.
But now, does Apple go off and try to hire other companies, Apple who won't pay for hacks, hire other companies to try to replicate the hack so they know what it is so they can close it?
Right. I have to think that Apple has lots of security companies kind of already trying to, right? I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, it's troubling.
So. This is the process. Apple even says, you know, nothing is perfect. There's no technology that doesn't have flaws or bugs that might be used to exploit that technology. And in fact, they said this in the Times article. And that's why it's so important that companies pay bug bounties, that they go to hackers and encourage hackers to say, you know, tell us first before you release this publicly so that we can fix it, because there is nothing perfect.
Right.
So it's maybe a foolish thing for Apple to not offer these bug bounties, but I think that it's also a principled thing. I don't think they want to pay. It's like negotiating with terrorists.
Right.
But that presumes that the person who actually cracks it is ill-intentioned. If the intent is to say, I'm trying to help you close vulnerabilities.
Well, and but that's not
the I really business. Like a job at Apple.
But yeah. It celebrates right? business. This is how they make money. This is what they do. They're a forensics company, and often that's what it means is you look for 0 days that will allow you to do the forensics on the phone. And that's their bread and butter. That's their stock of trade. They're not going to tell Apple that. They don't want it to be closed. They'll have to come up with a new one. So that's where the ethics, I'm kind of with you. The ethics are a little sketchy.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I do want to talk a little bit about Hulk Hogan, because God knows who doesn't. And yeah, we'll be playing that video a little later on. No, we won't. No.
If Lisa were here, she'd be saying, we don't have the insurance.
Isn't it newsworthy now?
Yeah.
So protected by the First Amendment?
Well, but that was Gawker's argument that it was then, but we'll talk about
it. Well, it certainly is now.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just saying.
Let's not.
Be good for ratings.
Let's not. I'd like to opt out of that.
It's a forbidden visual. Yeah, I don't want to
see it either, to be honest with you. There is other things to talk about, including I'm very upset with Google for killing one more thing that they say nobody uses, but I use.
I'm surprised you use it. And we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about that when we come back. Our show today, not only brought to you by the great folks at CUNY, and we thank CUNY so much for the studio and for the support, and we're really looking forward to doing this with you guys. This is going to
be
fantastic. But also by our friends at ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring, you know that the Internet's a boon for this, right? It means you can reach out to a much larger pool of candidates. In fact, I think it's safe to say that the perfect person's out there somewhere. Your job as a hirer, as a recruiter, is to find them. Well, how do you find them? There's lots of job boards. There's lots of social media. What do you do? What do you use? Let me recommend ZipRecruiter. With ZipRecruiter, you post once on the ZipRecruiter site. They cross-post to more than 100 job boards, plus Twitter, plus Facebook, plus Craigslist, LinkedIn, all the social media. So you're getting to the widest possible audience, really improving the chance of hitting that right person, the one you really want to hire. And you might say, well, I don't know if I want to reach out to a million people. What if I get a million resumes? No, that's good, because the resumes don't come to your inbox. The people don't call you on the phone. They go into the ZipRecruiter interface, where it's very easy for you to manage many, many applicants. You can quickly screen them, rank them, and hire the right person fast. ZipRecruiter's got this down. No wonder, I think it's like us, last time I checked, 800,000 businesses have used, 800,000. Last time we talked, it was 400,000. It's very popular, have used ZipRecruiter. Plus, they also have, because if you go to the ZipRecruiter site, you'll see they also reach out to job hunters. They have more than 6 million current resumes. They're going to match you to those right away. That means within 24 hours, the applicants are going to start rolling in, and you're going to find that right person fast. We got an email from Dan. I think he heard about it on the show. He's a happy ZipRecruiter client. He says, the hardest part of, there's a quote, direct quote from the email. The hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is that you have to spend extra time recruiting while you're short-staffed. But with ZipRecruiter, I've got quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage the candidates in one place. I want you to try ZipRecruiter right now, free, for the first 4 days. That's probably enough time for you to get that person. ZipRecruiter.com/twig, T-W-I-G, ZipRecruiter.com/twig, 4 days free. Try it, really. You'll do yourself a favor. ZipRecruiter.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support for this week in Google. I like the Chrome app launcher.
Tell me about that. How do you feel about that?
I thought it was a little weird when they announced it. It's only been around for a year or two.
Yeah.
But the idea is, if you've installed Chrome extensions, and I do, I use a lot of Chrome. Anybody who uses a Chromebook has a lot of Chrome extensions. The app launcher then, and more than just on the Chromebook, because this really is valuable on Windows and Mac, it will put up an icon like it's an app, and there'll be the apps will be there, and you can run them as if they're standalone apps.
Right, right. So it's sticking around on Chrome OS, right? They're only taking it away from Mac, Windows, and Linux.
Yeah, and they say that nobody used it, except that I did use it.
You're nobody.
So you absolutely need it on a Chromebook, because that's when you press the search button. That's what you're going to get. And it says all apps, and that's how you launch them.
Right.
What they're telling Mac, Windows, and Linux users is, oh, no, you're going to have to go to the toolbar. If you don't have an icon in the extensions, you're going to have to go through the manual process of going to more tools and extensions and running it from there. I don't think that's a very good experience. Why would they kill it? And my real point, I think, is Google does this too much. And I think Microsoft has done this a little bit too, but they take a lot longer to give up on something. I use this as an example. Windows Media Center, which a lot of people use, but they stopped developing in 2009 and only just killed in Windows 10. So for 7 years, they didn't do anything to it, but they figured, well, we're not going to kill it. Google, it's kind of modern, right? What is it Facebook says? Move fast and break things.
Yep.
Kill things fast. But I think that hurts them.
This is kind of an example. I mean, listen.
I was waiting for you to be cruel enough to bring that up.
Listen, Google's a data-driven company. If they're not seeing the use that they expect, the critical mass of use, which has got to be a lot of use, right? I mean, they killed Wave because it was like, well, a million users, not so much. Yeah. I'd kill for a million users.
Can't they afford to keep these things going?
They can, but you know what? Even a company like Google, why would you expend resources on stuff that people just aren't clicking on?
I'll tell you why. Because nobody trusts Google now.
Because they keep taking things away.
You're going to be much less likely to go all in on a Google. So if they were to launch another Google Plus at this point, I mean, I've been burnt twice. Buzz, Google Plus. I'm not going to join in another Google network.
Google Plus is still there, Leo.
But I mean, now we're talking about communities versus a little utility in your toolbar. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, it doesn't matter to them,
is what I'm saying, is they don't care. They'll kill anything. Community, Wave, little toolbar utility, doesn't matter. And that's very engineering driven. That's very data driven. That's very Google, right? That's so Google of them.
Yes.
That would be a good show. That's so Google.
So Google of you. So Google of you, Leo. But doesn't everyone just have a browser open always? And, you know, if you need to go to an app, you go to it. And the apps button is right here in the bookmarks toolbar right there. That's basically the app launcher, right? I guess this page functions just as well.
I know. I'm not saying you're saying what Google's saying, right?
I am. I'm agreeing with Google on this. I feel like if they don't have the users, it doesn't make sense to support it. I wouldn't feel that way if I loved and used the toolbar. Like,
which
I do.
The point is that there, let's say it's only a million people, but every time you do that, I think you hurt your brand and you show a lack of staying power that in the long run means people are going to be less likely to use your tools.
I think I read that killing Google Reader is what led to Donald Trump.
Is that true?
Everything's being blamed for Donald Trump.
It's all Donald Trump's fault.
Yeah, so Google Reader is it.
Google Reader was particularly painful. I'll agree there.
So you don't care about this one.
Right.
But you might care about another one. I just feel like it's a very, I guess what I would say to Mr. Google, if he ever asked me, is launch fewer things and stick with them. But Google's idea is let's launch a million things and kill a lot of them because
they have no idea what people are going to like and use. Yeah. Gmail is a 20% project.
Right.
I mean, they're big breakout hits.
Google News,
you know,
20%.
Yeah, news.
The thing I keep hearing about Google is that it has just hordes of underemployed people.
They could keep a couple of guys working.
But what
on
they
this
do
thing.
Is, so the underemployed person invents something new, and then they kind of say, meh, and they kill it.
Yeah. Is it just me? I mean, maybe I'm the only one who feels this way. I just feel like it sends a message that is not necessarily good for Google. They must be aware of this. They're smart guys.
Yeah, but
maybe they don't care.
I mean, if they maintained everything that they had ever launched and didn't do so well, we'd still have Null.
No, I agree. So that's what I'm saying
Buzz,
is maybe do
we'd
some
have Wave,
do,
even Wave. I'll concede.
Do more internal testing. Launch fewer things. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe that's why they always said beta.
Yeah, but that's what's somebody wrote a book about this. That's what's open about them. that's what makes them generous, and that's what gives us the in on helping tell them what products ought to be. And if we tell them, we don't care, then they listen to that too.
It's just impossible to predict what people are going to love and use. Like, what are the things that people, you know?
I guess
if it was easier
that.
To predict, there'd be a lot more successful.
By the way,
startups.
They got to do something about Google Plus. I should post this image.
Uh oh.
Well. So Google Plus is still good. I mean, I still follow people there. There's some good people there posting a lot of stuff. Mike Elgin, now that he's back on the road, he's in Cuba. He's posting there all the time, and it's great. I love it. In fact, I've been reading more Google Plus because of Mike's posts there. But I'm going along, and they have a thing called Hot Topics that you don't control. And I've mentioned this before. You don't control what's in Hot Topics. It's just them intruding into your stream. And in this case, it was literally, it was an anti-Semitic rant.
Yo.
And it had, and I looked, and I screenshot it, so I'll have to post it on Google+. It had like 3+1s. It had 2 comments. And they said trending topic. There's nothing trending about it. And this has happened to me a number of times. We're really kind of, it doesn't agree with my politics, but even, but I mean, anti-Semitism is more than just not agreeing with my politics. Fringy stuff that I don't understand why Google's surfacing it. If it had 100+ maybe, but it didn't.
They also have less data now.
Maybe that's
they had something tuned to a lot of people using it.
Because this guy posted?
Yeah.
One maybe post, that's it. Hey, it's
I'm getting very few people. I mean, there's like 4 people I see now on the Google Plus feeds.
Well, that's a way to kill it faster and faster, right?
Well, look, there's an app launcher in Google Plus. That might be a reason.
Oh. Well, now I'm liking it. Wow. That's good.
Sorry, just kidding. Just teasing.
But this is somebody I can't uncircle because I never circled them. I can't get rid of it. It's stuck into my feed. I mean, it's not. I'm not a little shrinking violet. I can see it. It's not going to poison me, but I don't want to see it. I don't know. All right, enough of that. That's my personal problem. I'm happy
should be,
today,
there should be a regular segment. Leo's Kvetch.
No, that's your segment. You already own that segment.
I rant, you Kvetch.
Oh, okay. What are you going to do, Gina?
I don't know what I'm going to do.
She Kvels.
You're going to hug. She's going to hug. She's a hugger.
Well, now that we're in New York, we're going to do the show in Yiddish.
Yiddish. That's what everybody is afraid of. That's exactly. We got New York values. I can see that. Yeah. That's the dog whistle, isn't it? Oh, it's New York values.
We know what that means.
Renaming Chromecast to Googlecast. What does that mean? Why?
Why?
I thought Googlecast was the name of the protocol. I thought that it was like the technology behind the Chromecast.
So they
now
have
they're
a
just
nice
sort of
page
merging
if you,
them?
If you go to google.com/cast.
It's just the cast.
It says meet Googlecast as if we haven't met
that as if we haven't met, exactly.
It may be, though, they want to get beyond the little dongles to something larger.
Well, Nele wrote a really interesting piece about Vizio TVs and getting rid of the remote, oddly replacing it with an Android tablet. But the argument is that you just cast whatever you're watching. And so maybe in his argument, they're trying to with Vizio, they're really reinventing the notion and the experience of television.
I like it that Vizio is acknowledging that maybe they're not the best software developers in the world. Actually, Vizio's smart TVs are better than Samsung's, which are really
horrific. I have one. They're great.
Yeah, the Vizios aren't bad.
They're really good.
And maybe that's why they want to make them even better. But requiring that somebody own an expensive...
No, they sell you with the TV. You
it comes
the tablet
with it.
That is just Android. I think it's Lollipop. But...
That's interesting.
But it's... So it's not just a remote.
So you don't get a remote with a new Vizio TV.
You get this instead. And what I don't know is, can I use my phone instead?
Now, we should mention... This is the P series, which is their horrendously expensive high end TVs. They only make 2 models. There's, I think, a 70 and 120 inch.
Jesus.
And the big one is like over 100 grand.
It's like you buy a Tesla and you get a tablet with it.
Exactly. So, so that's maybe isn't something that they're going to do.
Well, but I think what it says.
And by the way, you do get
is,
a regular remote as well as.
Oh,
a
you
tablet.
Do?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
I,
it says that. You know, you could be using your phone truly as a remote.
Well, that's what I do with Chromecast. No. I think that's what's great about Chromecast.
I think that's what they're saying.
Is you pick the app.
Googlecast, Leo. Googlecast.
What is it?
Googlecast.
Google. I guess it makes sense to take the word Chrome out of it. Because it has nothing to do with the browser
guess,
at all.
But it's
Jake
weird.
Was saying to me earlier, it has nothing to do with Chrome.
Did you bring a Happy Meal? Right. What is that?
This?
It looks like a Happy Meal. Oh, it says the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. You have your own cardboard.
Isn't that cool?
What are you going to do with that?
Well, we can watch porn later.
No, seriously.
maybe
that was serious. I don't know. So why is CUNY doing
We're getting big into VR.
Journalism.
One of our web video geniuses, Sasha, is really learning a lot about it.
I think that's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
New York Times did that, right? They distributed those with the Sunday Times a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Cardboard is funny because it feels like the poor stepchild of Google's, you know, I mean, to Samsung's Gear VR and then an Oculus Rift, which is $700, and Vive, which is $800, and this is 59 cents. Yeah. But it actually works fine.
It works fine.
Most accessible VR there is out there. You have a phone and a piece of cardboard, and you get to try this out. Yeah. It's a good gateway.
I agree. Good on you. The needs of journalism in VR are very different because, for one thing, there's no fourth wall. So the journalist or the camera operator is in the story.
Well, that's the controversy with the New York Times. No, the journalist steps out of the story, so the journalist is setting up the story.
So they're saying to the subject, wait, hold on. Start packing your lunch in a minute, and then disappears.
And that's a problem.
I don't like that.
I think so. One thing I was just
so you should be in the shot. You're part of it.
To my colleague Bob, I was suggesting we should do kind of a how-to of how is it made, so you see what happens,
and then how to do it ethically as opposed to staging.
It even starts here, Leo. I think we've gotten a bunch of the fetas, which you used on your cruise on the
yeah, I have it with me actually. Yeah,
and I think there's the opportunity there for journalists to start thinking in 360.
I agree.
In immersion. You know, somebody else just did a 360 of an interview with somebody. That makes no sense to me. So I'm going to look behind me when there's nobody talking, right?
No. It's about
the space.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's where I use it on a cruise ship. I was thinking about using – we went down. It was very moving, by the way, to the 9/11 Museum and Memorial. And I was thinking – I was going to use the Theta there, but then I actually thought better of it. It seemed inappropriate. But that's the kind of place where –
did you take pictures there? Do people take pictures there?
Yeah. So there's a part of the museum that you can take pictures of, and there's – you know, amazing stuff. The last pillar, you know, when they were cleaning out the rubble, they left one steel beam there till the very, very end. And people were covering it with names and memorials. And then with great honor, at the very end, they took it down and they escorted it out. And, you know, there were salute. It's quite moving. They have pictures of it. They're saluting as it goes. And then, of course, they built a beautiful memorial. I know you guys both.
Have you gone?
No, I can't do it. I haven't been able to do it yet. I'm going to do it.
Leo's saying to me that I should.
Can't do it.
It'd be cathartic. Well,
we should.
Here it is 15 years later.
Yeah, it's been a while. I would like to go to One World Trade and do the elevator ride. I hear is amazing. I heard that's amazing. No. Maybe not, Jeff.
He's not doing that.
I'm going to do it.
I think it's one of the most beautiful and appropriate memorials I've ever seen. It's very difficult. Imagine, how do you do a memorial? And there was, I'm sure, a lot of debate about, do we rebuild? What do we do with this site?
Yeah.
And I think they did exactly the right thing, which is they didn't rebuild on the site. They built next to it, this beautiful building.
Right.
What is it, One World Trade Center now? Is that what
it's
called?
One World Trade is the... Mm-hmm.
But where the bases of 1 and 2 were... There's a hole in the ground, and then there's a waterfall with a second
hole. Have you seen
that?
The footprints. I've seen drawings of
it. It is
so moving.
I've gone to that.
And then all the way around it, the names. And in many places, I wanted to take a picture. Again, I just didn't want to intrude, so I felt I didn't do it. But there are roses and flags and memorials.
Every time walking by, I'm like, can I do this right now? No, I'll do it later.
Yeah. Well, I understand. It's very hard. Yeah. So in that shot, if you're watching video, at the top of it is the new building, and then the two squares below that are, this is Google Earth, are the memorials. And they're really very touching.
My response, so the first time I went, they had huge security. It was worse than going to an airport to get in. Now it's open, but then
it's
it was very
open.
Closed.
Yeah.
And that was disturbing.
Yeah.
What has happened to us? And I had an odd reaction. This will be controversial, but after the first time, I actually think that it's too big. That it leaves the scar forever in the city, and life goes on, and things get built upon things. You know, look at ancient cities, and for this to forever be hallowed ground, it's like, I don't really understand I'm not criticizing for a second, but putting a memorial on the highway where someone died, that would be the last place I'd want a memorial to meet. is where you died. Yeah, mm-hmm. Do it somewhere else. I mean, I get it. I understand it. But it's just not what I see. So what we did was we said, this is hallowed because people died there. Well, yes, but they've died all over the city in various ways.
Yes. Right.
And you can't lock off everything that had tragedy associated with
it. We were walking by City Hall. And, of course, that was a notorious British prison camp during the Revolution where many more people died and suffered for years. And now it's a park, and it's not a memorial at all. In fact, I only knew that because of Foursquare.
I was going to say, boy, your history is good, Leo.
Did you know that you're on the site? And actually, that was a very neat use of Foursquare.
Foursquare is fantastic.
I was really pleased. Yeah. I learned something. So I don't agree with you. I understand. I actually don't disagree with you.
And yeah,
you have
no,
more standing
I'm not saying
to
that
say
I'm
that.
Saying that. It was an emotional reaction.
I can understand that completely.
And totally legitimate.
And yet it is a beautiful memorial.
It is.
And I think
it is.
We need memorials in all sorts of places. And yeah. It's a really touching memorial. And then next to it is the museum, which I had seen the memorial before, but I hadn't seen the museum. And I know you guys haven't.
Right.
And that is something you will have to gird yourself for because it is very heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And there's tissues everywhere and people needed them. Because I needed them. There was, so you can take pictures of parts, and I did take some pictures, and then you go into an exhibit where you're not allowed to take pictures, and that's where there's sound and video and pictures, and it's it brings it all rushing back. So don't go there.
I'm going to block off a couple of days for that, I think.
Maybe it's time. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
you know,
it has been a long time.
The morning of the, I was riding the PATH train, which is where I was on the morning of 9/11, and I was riding it on the morning of the Belgium attacks, and it just kind of brought it back. Yeah, I had flashbacks. To just seeing the faces on the PATH train that day.
You know, I have the same reaction to 9/11 and to this Belgian incident. I just don't understand people and why they do that. I understand the anger that people feel as we bomb them with,
however, these were predators.
Yeah, and they're taking an innocent life. I mean, I understand the anger, but I think we just need to stop all of this and maybe truce and we can figure it out because it's so sad.
I fear we'll go the opposite way, though.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Come to New York and you just have a ball.
Yeah, it's really...
Well, it's the first thing I did. I wanted to do that.
I'm really joyful here.
I actually do that a lot.
You did.
Almost every time I've come to New York, I've actually gone to Ground Zero.
Really?
Yeah. The first time I came was a month after 9/11.
Yeah.
And I went there, and of course, it was still, it was all chain-link fence and plastered memorials. And even where... Have you seen my husband? Have you seen my son? And it was so. I have a very strong connection
today,
to it.
There is a smell to the city.
Yeah,
you can't forget.
No,
then they built a beached whale next to it, which is now that I think they could have stopped.
Beached dead whale.
I thought the Oculus was going to be beautiful, but then you get to the scene and you have this beautiful, touching memorial, and there's whale bones. What is that? The PATH station.
PATH station. Yeah.
It is. I'm sure it's. I'm not an architectural critic.
No, I agree. There it is, going up.
Yeah,
it's
I hadn't seen
Jonah.
It before.
We walk in, you're Jonah.
It's huge, and that's the other thing is you don't realize how big that is. It's giant. It takes over the site. It's like a whale died there, and its beached bones, its bleached bones, are still there. I don't get it, but I'm not an architectural critic.
It was going to in the original conception. I think it was going to open up to the air and close.
Mm. It does. It seems like it has louvers or levers.
But it doesn't really open.
Oh,
that cost more money. It cost enough as was.
Welcome back to This Week in Architectural Criticism. All right, we're moving along here. How about Tesla using Google Glass to help build? Speaking of Tesla, to help build cars in his
if
factory.
If anyone can find a use for that damn thing, it's
Tesla.
It's Tesla.
Actually, it won't be Google Glass.
It won't be.
Well, it's going to be from a company called Vuzix. They're using Glass and Vuzix at the Fremont factory. They're comparing the platforms, so there will be a winner at some point. But it makes sense. I mean, you think of Teslas being built by robots, but they're humans.
Yeah.
Too.
For now.
And this is a legitimate use case for glass-like technology,
I think,
right?
So.
Surgeons
yeah.
and, you know, specialized work like this.
I would think it'd be more useful, though, in repair than in assembly.
Yeah.
Assembly, you know what you're doing.
Right.
You have a task.
It's just,
do it.
Yeah. Right. Flip the widget.
This is actually apparently a picture of a Tesla being made. I think you got that 9 to 5 Google from glass. That's a picture of a glass, and you see the VIN number in the glass, and you see details, start repair, get help. It's very interesting. Very interesting. Gadget Hog in our chat room says that design is very typical of the architect Calatrava who did it.
Yes, it is.
He does that kind of thing. So.
Controversial as he is.
They knew what they were getting.
Mm-hmm.
And the BCE Center in Toronto is built by him. It's not whale bones, but it has that same kind of curvy shape. Interesting. Moving along here. Google Glass. Albums in photos are smarter. I love photos. Behind the scenes, we took pictures of this set and stuff right before we started. I copied the pictures to my lovely Galaxy S7.
Very nice.
And then I, so now it's a Google, it's in Google Photos. Thank you to Jake, your son, for taking those pictures, by the way. And I'm going to share them off to the studio, and we'll probably have them up before the show's over. Another great use, I tell you, of Google Photos. Look at that. I could just share these as a shared album. These albums are getting smarter. You can add maps, locations, and captions as well. So a new shared album. I'm going to create a link, and then I'm going to share it with email with Jerry. Jerry, you're going to get pictures in the email. Let's see it. Let's see. We'll do it in real time, see how it works. What else? Google asked 1,000. Go ahead. You take this
one. Yeah, take that one, Jeff. I want to hear your reaction.
Google asked 1,000 British teenagers whether they wanted to start a startup, and I think not many said yes. Sorry,
most
Europe.
Of them said no. I don't, no, what are you talking about? Only 22 of them said,
of the 1,000.
I don't want to start a startup.
22%.
What do they want to do? Oh, 22%. Well, that's not so bad.
That's not so bad,
better
actually.
Than 22.
Because if everyone wanted to start a startup, then there'd be nobody to hire to start your startup.
That's true. It is interesting, though, that these kids are like, I'm going to be responsible and get a job at a stable company and not be so reckless.
But you know what, Gina?
it is a little scary.
Even though you're still but a pup, how would you have felt about doing the startup you're doing now when you were 22 years old?
Oh, I would not have done it.
Right. So a lot of my entrepreneurial students go get jobs.
Yeah.
They learn
I
the
think
business.
That's appropriate.
They go get jobs.
Yep.
But they still have the bug. The virus won't leave them. It's like Zika, and they then go start their company.
No, that's true. That's true. I always kind of considered myself a late bloomer. I became more risk tolerant and more confident as I get older.
Me
which
too.
I don't know what that was about. In college, I would have never thought about. Although, you know, when I talk to my nephews, I'm like, have you thought about maybe starting a business? You know, like there's employers and employees, kids. Like you want to be an employer. You know, I got to give them my whole speech.
Is it possible that some kids will do it just defensively because they can't get jobs?
That's
I mean,
true.
You know, I think that's a lot of it. I think young people are feeling.
Let's ask the chat
afraid room. Of not being able to get jobs.
How many of you in the chat room would like to do a startup right now instead of getting a job?
Says P Shops, being an entrepreneur isn't the be-all and end-all of work.
Yeah.
That's
in fact, it's a crappy job. Don't do it.
It's hard.
It's tough, you guys.
Dr. Mom wants to be 62.
It's tough.
Dr. Mom, we're about the same age.
Yes. No, it's hard. Starting a company is very,
Yogi
very
wants
tough.
To. Slow-mo wants to. Part of it is the knowledge that most startups fail.
Yes.
Yes.
If you asked 1,000 British teenagers if they wanted to start a restaurant, they'd probably say no too.
Yeah. and the reality is that most people who start companies have a safety net. They've got family.
Right.
They've got, you know, they're healthy, they're in a good position, they have connections. I mean, I don't know how many times I've talked to investors and they've said, you know, just like little friends and family money. And I was kind of like, who do you think my family is? Oh. Like, my mom was a public school teacher. Like, where's what friends and family money, you know? So there's that
as
well.
Do you think that most entrepreneurs come from wealthy backgrounds or come from poor backgrounds? I feel like people like Jason Calacanis was driven to being an entrepreneur, right?
He's a special psychological case.
Calacanis and I have actually debated about this because he's got this like perception of himself as being this like,
kid.
You know, this scrappy kid who grew up in Brooklyn. Yeah, he grew up like a couple blocks away from me in a very middle class neighborhood in Brooklyn. Like, and he went to the Catholic high school just like I did. Like, we were not, I was not poor.
Middle class.
Yeah.
Donald Trump thinks he was, you know, started under rough circumstances. He only got $1 million loan.
I mean, you know, self-perception is a powerful thing. Sorry, Jason.
Dr. Mom says most come from a background where they're willing to take risks, whatever the economic background. That may be true.
You actually have to be risk-tolerant, but there have been studies that have shown that most entrepreneurs have some sort of safety net, right? I mean,
I did.
You know. Yeah.
I did.
So
I kept the radio job. I still haven't quit it because I don't know if this Twit thing's going to work out.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
So.
Well, so I last week I couldn't be on the show because I was at CBIT giving a talk.
By the way, how'd that go?
CBIT's strange because CBIT used to be the thing.
It's the biggest conference in the world, isn't it? No.
Well, because they lost all the gadgets to Mobile World.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And who buys PCs and all that kind of
gadgets anymore? It's become like Comdex was.
It's all big iron and stuff like that. But then what matters there now? The cloud. How do you show the cloud?
Yeah. Right? It's
Amazon
very abstract.
Amazon came with a big blow-up cloud. And you go inside and there they had a few desks.
Right.
It's virtual.
It's all back there in Armonk. So just imagine, if you will,
a couple of tablets.
A bunch of servers.
So but the European, you know, part of the reason they had me over is to, you know, kind of beat them up about starting companies. And the one thing I do say is that at least we in the U.S., we have at least five times the venture investment of Europe.
Yeah.
Some estimates 10 times, but
yeah.
call it five times.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a Google if you don't invest. And you've got to have risk. The paradox here is, the irony here, I think, is that in Europe, they do have safety nets.
Yes.
I mean, not that you could live on them entirely, but you can have health insurance. You can leave your job. You can do other things. Your kids can go to college. But there's a risk aversion, especially in Germany, but in Europe. And I say at the same time, I think we've fetishized risk in the U.S. I think when we put a badge on you and say, oh, you failed, it could be because you had a really crappy idea and you did it badly.
Right.
But and maybe you should have failed. You shouldn't try it anymore.
Right.
This is the lesson.
Sometimes failure is deserved.
Yeah. But that's not the way we treat it in the U.S.
No. Yeah, that's always been the truism about Europe is that their failure keeps them from having this entrepreneurial
and
spirit.
And they'll say it to me.
This VC spirit, yeah.
I mean, I can make unfair generalizations about Europe, but that's not one of them because they'll agree.
I think on the other hand, we have fetishized the pull yourself up by your own bootstraps mm-hmm. story here,
yes.
that everybody can make it here and the streets are paved with gold and the app economy is just another form of that fairy tale where, well, anybody can write an app, and thanks to Google Code Engine or Amazon Web Services, anybody can create a startup. Mm-hmm. And it is easier than it ever was, but I think it's also harder because everybody's doing it.
Well, right.
It's harder to succeed.
Yeah.
Everybody can have a Candy Crush, but they can't.
Right.
Right. No, they can't.
Right.
Yeah, no. The App Store is definitely not.
So while we're just talking about App Stores, so TechCrunch did a piece this week arguing that the reported Facebook Messenger bot store that they suppose they're going to announce at F8 is going to be as big as the App Store. What do you think about
bigger?
About bigger.
Here's what
bigger.
I would say.
Wow.
Well, certainly what everybody's
Gina's
looking for
be going off doing bots.
Is
we
the
we
next...
got commitment here.
Well, look at who was it? Was it Quartz did an app?
Yeah,
that was a news app, but it really wasn't a news app. It was a bot, wasn't
right.
it? It was clearly a test case for how would news be delivered in a messaging context.
One of our graduates in the entrepreneurial program has a very hot company out there now called Purple, which talks to you about the election in SMS.
So here's the
here's this conversational interface.
Yes, a conversational interface for news and information.
I could tell you how we got here. So it's clear that the new platform, the new screen, is not the desktop, the laptop, the tablet. It's the phone, right?
Right.
That's if you're simply looking at hours of interaction, that's where all the interaction happens.
The device
happens.
Formerly known as a phone.
Right. Or, yes,
right.
This screen.
The
you
thing
have,
that people used to talk on.
As Bruce Sterling calls it, our glass lozenge. So what is where if you want to get a piece of that, it's about attention on the glass screen, right?
Right.
And the first thing was, well, you want to be the app on the front page. It was all about that. For the first couple of years, it was all about that.
Right.
Not so much so anymore. Next thing was notifications. Everybody's hot on notifications.
Right.
In fact, look what Facebook did. That's one of the reasons Facebook split off messengers to double the number of notifications. Because how do people interact? They swipe down or they I can't remember what you do on an iPhone, but you look at your notifications. It's been so long, a whole week. But you look at your notifications, you swipe down, there's all your, that's another way to get that screen attention. But ultimately, what is the thing that gets your attention most often? What do you think you interact with most often on your lozenge is messaging,
from friends.
Right?
Yep. Direct messages from friends.
So you're in Messenger all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what's going to happen is, and we're already seeing this with products like Slack, I think.
Yep, I was going to say that.
Is the new inbox.
Mm-hmm.
It's as bad as your email was because... Messaging was only great because no one used, it was just close friends and family. But once Quartz is in there and your delivery service is in, if once everybody's messaging you, it's worse than your email
inbox. Does it replace Google to some extent? Because you can ask questions and get more direct answers from a smarter machine.
That's what Google thinks. They think that search is going to messaging, right?
Right.
So, and I have, the only reason I think I have some insight is because I really went all in on Telegram. Which I really liked. And Telegram has had bots for a while. I even have a bot myself. So you could.
There's a Leo bot?
There's a Leo bot.
What does it do?
Chief Twit bot. Well, I'll show you. It it does all sorts of things.
What
do you think it does?
What do you think the Leo bot does?
It's called the Mechanical Leo,
is
right?
Is there a kvetch mode?
There should be. There's going to be a kvetch mode. So the last four posts were when I put an audio show up. You get a notification.
Right.
Leo's posted a new audio show. I do it for audio, not for video, because I figure, well, you'll click that, you'll listen, and you'll continue on.
Right.
I've also tied it to my car. So when I pull up in front of the studio, there's a message. Leo pulled up. let's go live. So that's...
this is like push RSS feed.
It's RSS.
It's really old.
Does it sound familiar?
Right? It's like friend feed. You know, right.
When I blog, when I post on Instagram, it all goes into this mechanical Leo. Now, I would have thought I was just playing with it to learn the platform.
Right.
There's thousands of people subscribed to this.
Really?
I can't remember the number, but it's over 1,000 people. What? So that, to me, was kind of an eye-opener. Yeah. Oh, okay. But my instinct is that this is going to have the same problem Slack has, which is it's going to be an inbox without any of the good controls that you have in email, right, filters and all email, that stuff. Yeah. It's just going to become jammed. Here's Assist Bot. I can order flowers. I can get a ride, food delivery. This is a chat bot. Food restaurant reservations, hire a courier, discover places, event tickets, book hotels, get haircut, and you do it by messaging. The inspiration for this, of course, is WeChat in China, where that's what people do. Okay. And I think that might have had more success. I'm not sure why that had more success in China. Possibly because they were using less powerful devices, maybe. So messaging is certainly easier to write a messenger bot than it is to write an app.
Right,
it's trivial,
notifications.
Right?
Well, a messenger bot, yes, but an intelligent bot you can query, no, and a bot that can anticipate your needs and let you know of something. A true alert. What do I get on my alerts all the time? So I have this brilliant colleague here at CUNY named Carrie Brown, who heads our social journalism, and she's very social. So on Facebook, where you can say, hey, put this person on the top and always show you at the top, well, she's constantly buzzing me, right?
Right.
Or Facebook.
Oh, and by the way, watches now make this even more valuable,
right? So right. Facebook constantly tells me, you have new interactions. Well, no, really? Really? I have new interactions? No.
First thing I do is turn off notifications and email.
But there are some notifications I actually want. So a notification system, we've talked about this years ago.
Notifications are better than messaging, I think.
Yes, and one that is that anticipates your needs.
Right.
That is the hyperlocal news stream, as Marissa Mayer said back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But correct me if I'm wrong. Haven't we seen this kind of search for years? I feel like AOL Messenger had searched.
Right.
Right?
Well, there was a company that old friends of mine started called Smarter Child. Way back in the day, that was on AOL, and you could ask it questions, and you could go.
So exactly,
yeah.
So everything old is new again, or everything new is old.
But what's new here is the interface, like the idea that I'm interacting with another being, right? Like that I'm having a conversation versus like Google Now, which does a lot of stories tailored toward you and really can anticipate what you want without you having to query because you've already queried, you searched, right? You did a Google search, but it seems like the thing here is like I'm gonna interact with this thing versus get these sort of soulless or these push notifications from apps that are just like you have three new messages or here's something you might like today.
This is an area that I think I would love to see Google try lots of new ideas in. I think that's what Now was about, was the card interface, and I think Now on Tap is another way of kind of experimenting with how do people want to interact with information, how they want information to arrive.
Right.
Why is
right.
there a green light coming out from behind your watch under your wrist?
Probably it means heart my heart is beating in an unusual.
It's behind.
It's got to go through my blood, right?
That's how I was checking.
So I'm 69 beats a minute. I'm very calm.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Very calm.
That's good.
Being
in New York.
You know, New York relaxes me.
Times Square, very chill.
Oh, it's so chill. God, 2 in the morning. They've got characters out there.
I don't even know, but I just love that your advice is don't hug the
don't
Elmo.
Don't hug the Elmo.
I tell the students that. Don't hug the Elmo.
Cannot bring my toddler.
Who? That's a... Okay, they're not the cleanest looking Elmos anyway.
They get
hugged a lot?
Oh, yeah, because and then they can make money in the tips.
Oh, I know.
The poor tourist, the kid says, Elmo, Elmo!
Yeah,
oh, the kids hug Elmo.
Yeah, and they take the picture. Well, then, of course, there's the Denudas.
Yes, I didn't see any of those at 2 in the morning.
A little cold.
Yeah, it was chilly. I saw Batman, though.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the Naked Cowboy?
He's been there for years.
He's still years.
He's there's still he's got competition now, though. There's other naked.
He's got Naked Cowgirl, I think.
Yeah. And he's, by the way, they're not naked. No, they're wearing underpants.
That's awesome.
And tidy whiteys. It's not Friday.
They're tidy whiteys. Yeah. Ick. I'm sad to see this is another thing Google's giving up on, robotics.
Yeah.
Did you see they're selling, or they want to sell Boston Dynamics. I'm not sure why, but the impression I'm getting from reading these articles is this is what Brad Stone called it, a retreat from robotics.
I'm confused. I thought
I'm
this
too.
Was a moon screenshot, right? It seems like they're saying, well
Andy Rubin left. Do you think that's how part of it?
It sounds like there were definitely some politics. Andy Rubin left. They struggled with leadership. The Boston Dynamics wasn't interacting with Google's other divisions. This sounds like this was a human problem versus. And they're saying that this company didn't have revenue, you know, within the next 3 to 5 years.
Does Google care?
Well, what does Google
Alphabet
care? Exactly. Yeah. I thought that was the whole point of
it. They were doing amazing things. I heard some that the video of the guy being mean to the robot was their last-ditch effort to prove to Google how cool they were with their theory.
that was a mistake.
The videos have done amazing. Google seemed concerned about the PR issues around people getting upset that robots are going to take over.
Well, the truth is,
jobs.
one of the primary revenue streams for robotics is going to be military and police. And Google did pull back from that, but then you're hampering the company.
Well, yeah. Boston Dynamics did have military contracts. Google said when they acquired them, well, we're going to let those lapse. But apparently they didn't or weren't able to. Brad writes in Bloomberg Business, tensions between Boston Dynamics and Google partly was because they didn't want to work with Google. They were reluctant to work with Google's other robot engineers. Now, it's not clear if those engineers were robots or they were real people working on engineers. So, Brad, again, when you're writing about robots, it's very important to be.
I imagine like the android statues out on Google's campus kind of like having it out with the robot dogs.
But also part of the problem was, as you said, that there was no clear path to monetization. I mean,
I just didn't realize that was a concern for the other Alphabet. That seems strange to me.
It does. It did to me, too.
Jonathan Rosenberg, who is an advisor to Larry Page and a former Google senior vice president, said in a meeting, time frame that we need to be generating an amount of revenue that covers expenses, and that needs to be in a few years. That does seem like an unusually non-Googly thing to ask for.
So Alphabet is running these companies within it as startups.
I have to think some of this also comes from, and this was the speculation Sunday on Twit, a reluctance. When you look at these videos, I think there might be some people at Google said, do we really want people to associate us with kind of killer robots? Is that really...
No.
That's maybe not the right message to be saying right now.
And people who are mean to robots and make you sympathetic with a robot.
Yeah.
It's all a screwed up world.
We're already struggling with trust, you guys. Yeah. Let's not make this worse.
That actually rings a little bit true. I mean, they've got to be a little bit aware of that.
But isn't a self-driving car a robot?
Yeah, well, it is.
Yes.
And that's the problem is that Google has other robotics divisions.
Yes.
We're getting some blips every few seconds on the stream, apparently. I'm hearing from our people back there.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that.
Is it possible for us to dial down the quality to improve the stream? Can that help? Can we do that?
What do we think, guys?
They're going to do that.
Okay.
Thank you. So, yeah, quality is not quite as important.
Because we're recording here. We can send
you. Yeah, but also the most important thing is audio quality. Video is secondary, and continuous audio is probably the primary.
Yeah, I saw it going on. I don't know if that was just us.
Piece of importance. Yeah, we actually, Jason, have a feed back of the stream here. So, continuing on, what do you think, guys? Actually, see what you want to talk about next.
All right. We'll
you haven't installed N yet.
I did on my other phone.
Oh, okay. Nut roll.
Yeah.
Android nut roll.
Yeah. I finally got a use for my old Nexus 6.
Oh, this is your secondary phone. Okay, I was going to say. No. On your daily driver.
On your Pixel.
No, because it's a little
It's early.
Dicey.
And I also haven't had any problems with it. I have it on my Pixel and my S6P.
I put Fi on the phone, too. And so when I went to Europe last week.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
Pretty well. I got, because I'm on AT&T Unlimited, I can't use this as a hotspot.
Right.
So I could do that in Europe.
Right.
On
Fi. Very slow.
Well, no, it would come in at 3G sometimes. I mean, 4G sometimes.
Really?
Yeah,
nice.
LTE.
For free?
Yeah. Well, for the data charge.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. So with T-Mobile, it's free.
Free?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know it might count against your data cap.
Okay.
But at that speed, I don't think it's something to worry about.
I feel like at some point it gets
That's one of the things that's weird about Google Fi is you pay as you go. Mm. So you don't get a bundle of bits to begin with.
Right. But it works fairly well.
Good. We'll talk a little more about Nutjob in a bit.
that's the one it isn't really
Android
the most PC
Nutjob
language.
That'd be good.
Nut roll.
I like it. Nut roll's my favorite. Nougat. Nutella. Everybody thinks it's going to be Nutella. I don't know.
Nah.
That's the brand name, right?
Yeah, they're not going to do
it
again.
I feel terrible about this. I did not bring snacks. And now I have to do a Nature Box ad. And now we're all going to suffer.
We are. I should have brought some of you home since you sent me. Nice enough to send them to me.
Google Android Nature Box. I bet they'd make a deal. Yeah. I bet they'd make a deal.
Yeah, there you go.
Nature Box. Back at the studio, we got Nature Box galore. We get, I can't remember how many boxes a month. We get like 5 or 6. Because the staff loves them. Nature Box sells snacks. They come. They deliver them in a box to you monthly. Snacks you want without wasting time and without going to the machine, which is about what Jeff's about to do. Go to the machine and get a stale candy bar. Do not.
They're bad for you. Greasy, oily, salty.
Nature Box, they have all kinds. They have sweet, savory, spicy. You get to choose. There's more than 100 snacks to choose from. There's vegan. There's no sugar added. There's non-GMO. Some of my favorites. I love the Asiago and cheddar cheese crisps. See, I don't want to do this.
I want the dried pineapple right now.
Yeah, that's the best.
That's really a happy box.
It's a happy box.
The happy box has arrived at my house.
Nature Box is a happy box. This is a new one. I haven't tried the guacamole bites.
Oh, that's
is there avocado in them?
Ooh.
That sounds good.
Super easy. You fill out your snack profile. You get personalized recommendations.
Wait. Your snack profile.
I have a snack profile.
Just everything.
Well, you might say I want more salty than spicy or more sweet.
Are they going to have a messenger bot that I can ask
for? Oh, that would be nice. Interact with your nature bot.
I want to share my snack profile on Facebook.
I want a nature bot. You shouldn't eat anything you don't like. If you get a snack, because they want you to experiment. And you say, well, you know, I'm not a jalapeno guy. No problem. They'll replace it in your next box for free. So it's just great all around. Naturebox.com/twit. And we're going to get you 50% off your first box of delicious and unique snacks without any of the junk. 50% off naturebox.com/twit. What was I thinking? Why did I not bring a Nature Box with me?
I know. Shame on me.
Oh, man. Android N has a freeform window mode. At least I've been reading about it. I haven't been able to make it happen. You know, kind of like a computer, like with windows floating and stuff like that. Article by Ron Amadio in Ars Technica. He says, you know, it's in the code, in the developer documents. But apparently there's a way to do it. So Do you have your N with you?
Hey, Jake. Can you get me the other phone for my office?
this is about the Pixel C, because then you have a desktop operating system, right? Even better than a Chromebook. The mode has to be enabled. Once it's enabled, you'll see an extra button on the thumbnails in the recent apps screen. So, you know, you hit the thumbnail button, you get the recent apps. To the left of the X button that pops up after a second or two, this is Ron says this, there'll be a square shape. And that will be, you press the square symbol and you'll be whisked away to a screen showing that app in a floating window on top of your paper. But the windows aren't floating above the Android desktop. The background is is blank wallpaper without any of your icons or widgets. So it isn't exactly like Windows. You're just in a floating app world. and you can drag the apps around and they have close and minimize. You can resize the window. Apps will auto-switch between tablet and phone layouts depending on the size of the screen. That's one of the things Android has a real advantage with.
Yeah.
You're an Android developer.
Yes. I'm going to be contrarian, though. I don't want this.
You don't want this?
I don't want this. Well, not for my phone. So this won't be enabled
for a tablet.
maybe for a tablet. I like that Android is kind of is a single tasking. I don't want it using up cycles or battery to do this kind of thing. This is a computer mode for me.
On a tablet, though, this would be awesome, wouldn't it?
I guess. I don't know.
It works with a mouse even. You can even plug a mouse in.
Why?
Well, you don't have to turn it on.
Okay, well, that's fair.
Shoot, I didn't get my key.
He's going to be back.
He's going to come back.
We may never see this.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get my key.
All right, here he comes.
And the split screen mode as well.
Yeah, I use the split screen mode already. And on the Pixel C, it actually really I don't use it for anything. But I could use it. you know what? Actually, I'm coming around to your way of thinking.
I
even though I have this capability, I don't. Like, what like, am I going to do? I have YouTube open and then the chat room?
I mean, well, here's where I have a little screen and screen thing, picture and picture.
The one thing I can imagine is not that you just have multiple things open so they're open, which is what you do with tabs and all that.
Right.
Though the truth is, I'm a Chrome user for so long, I don't have multiple windows open. I have tabs.
Right, tabs.
That's what I have.
Which is basically switching between apps, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a full screen.
It's a little better than on the stuff. I have to go back to the thing.
But, yeah, recent.
But I can see in some cases where I want two things on the screen so I can copy one or the other.
Yes, copy and pasting from one app to another.
So back in the day, children, way back in the day when I worked on my ATEX system at the Chicago Tribune, or maybe the San Francisco Examiner SII system, you had multiple save get keys. This is something that I'm amazed the industry has never had this. Rather than just one simple memory for save get, you could save that to A and that to B and that to C.
That's neat. Right? And return
so
to
then
it.
You came back in. So in the days of links and stuff like that, I want to go save these five things. And I come back and I can save to one, save to two, save to three, save to four, save to five.
That's a very Unix-y thing to do.
That is.
Emacs will do that.
There are some clipboard apps that will save. Like
you should use Emacs. You'd be happy with Emacs because you have buffers. You have as many buffers and you switch from buffer to buffer.
Right? So the problem is that I want to move things back and forth, right? And I can't. Thank you very much.
Actually, now that I read the method, it doesn't. We just wasted Jake's time.
Oh, we did?
Yeah. Because step one, flash a custom recovery like twerp.
You want to show Gina how
it
works?
It's early.
Yeah, I'll show you. So we don't have the over-the-shoulder camera yet, folks. The key is you have, just imagine. This is like, Microsoft had an event where they had a guy who was great. He was doing this demo of Windows 10. It was really cool, except they never showed his screen. So all you see is this guy going, isn't this great?
Like, cool.
Oh, and then you do that. It's really great. That's what we're going to do right now. So I think once I'm in Recents, right, I press and hold the Recents button, and it turns into a hamburger. No, I can't remember how you do it now.
I can't remember either. I was trying to do it. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
The notifications on N are really nice.
They've rolled up notifications. So all the notifications for any
really
given
nice.
App are rolled up into one notification.
Yeah, very
and you
nice.
Expand yeah, you get more, and you
I
can
do
more
love
with
that.
It.
Not enough delineation between each group, but whatever. They'll tweak the design for my taste. But I really like the rolled up notifications.
So what you're going to have to do here is you're going to have to enter the ADB shell and just type /systems/etc/permissions, and then you need to use sed. You're familiar with sed.
You know how good I am with this.
Okay.
Poor Gina tried to talk me through installing Unix on my first Chromebook.
I remember that.
Oh, that's right.
Was it Cronut? What was
Cronut.
It?
Yeah,
Cronut.
Yeah.
Oh,
God.
Do they still sell Cronuts? Can I go get a Cronut? Is that over already?
It's so over.
I'm sure that someone will be able to
I always called
sell
it Cronut, but it wasn't Cronut. It was
the thing I've always admired about San Francisco is that they ghettoize the tourists. The tourists go to a city that the San Franciscans never go to.
We just put you down at Fisherman's Wharf so we don't have to see you.
And Giardelli Square and all that, right? So that's what Cronuts are. We faked you out. The tourists go stand in line there like idiots. No New Yorker worth his salt is going to go get a friggin' Cronut.
I want a Cronut.
Times Square is a little bit of that.
There's a lot of that.
But not south of 40th Street.
No.
Where we are.
Where the
that's
real
true.
People
that,
are.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
What do you think of Google Now's new, more natural voice?
Hear it?
So I listened to this video. I did not hear a difference. I did not. They said it was subtle. It's so subtle that I did not hear it.
Is it like the change in Kraft Macaroni and Cheese?
It's rolling out. So there's a video in the article. I don't know if it's Android Police, but where it's purportedly, allegedly, the new voice. I watched it.
Okay,
I didn't hear the
Google
difference.
Now. How come your phone responded? Okay, Google. Yeah, stop it! I'm talking to this phone. Sorry, no. Oh, now I've really screwed it up.
I'm talking to this phone.
Okay, Google. Who is George Washington?
Here is some information about George Washington.
Oh, yeah, that sounds different. Or maybe I'm imagining it.
You're imagining it.
Listen, this is your work, so you hear things that maybe I don't hear.
That sounds different.
Did it sound different?
Okay, Google. How tall is Larry Bird?
Larry Bird is 6'9" tall.
Yeah, sounds like a nicer person.
Okay.
Doesn't she?
Yeah.
Okay, Google. Who is Leo Laporte?
Oh, you didn't get a voice response.
What? I've been demoted.
Did you used to get a voice response?
Yes. This is the rule of Twig. At some point, we're Googling ourselves. Like, that's every few
See,
episodes.
They kill good things.
I guess the show's dead now. No more This Week in Google. You can't screw with the boss.
The Amazon Echo knows who I am.
But you've got the knowledge. You've got the...
Alexa, who is Leo Laporte? That'll piss him off out there in the world.
Dr. Mom's going to kill you. Oh, man. That's really disheartening when that happens. God. They used to tell my whole biography and...
I'm sorry, Leo. You still... You still mean a lot to us.
By the way, Unixy is spelled U-N-I-X-Y, not E-U-N-U-C-H-S-Y. Okay, just I want to make that clear. When I'm talking the operating system, not the castrati. I sounded like that voice was different a little bit. But maybe I could be imagining that.
I think you're imagining it. So I think they fool with you. So I'm at an event last week about the Trust Project, which Google's helping out.
Yeah.
And the wonderful guy who's the product
the
manager.
The Trust Project.
I'll tell you about it in a second.
Okay.
So the wonderful guy who's product guy for AMP is there. And I've been trying to demonstrate AMP on my phone to people, and I'm not getting AMP content. It's a little slow. And I said, what the hell am I? He said, oh, there's an A-B test.
Oh, and you're in the B.
Of all the people in the world, I'm the guy who's selling AMP more than anybody on Earth. And I don't get
so
AMP.
On your browser, you don't get it, or where?
Yeah,
are you
so he had me open up a incognito window, and boom, there I got it.
Oh, so it's, I want to see this.
You ever seen AMP work?
I don't think that I have.
What?
I mean, I
okay.
I
so do a search for Obama.
Okay,
but don't do it. You can't do it on your desktop.
No,
you have to do it on
phone.
Mobile.
Okay,
that's why you haven't seen it.
Here,
you can do it on mine. Here, wait. So, because I'm in the A, I'm sure.
So
my
you,
phone's
Leo.
Charging.
Okay,
over.
So you could see that the this, by the way, this is still the problem I have with AMP.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
AMP results are way up above normal results.
I agree.
So this is an AMP carousel, right?
Yep, see how it says AMP there? So click on one of them.
So I'll click on BBC News, Argentina, Dirty War.
Bing. Now go to the next one. Just go.
Oh, I can do it this way?
Yes. Bing.
It's already loaded.
It's fast.
Bing.
It's there. That's really fast.
Whoa.
Sorry, I said bing.
Sorry, you can't see this. They have a typewriter here named Bing.
And what is this blue bar action? This means that
we're looking at the
Google copy. And that's it's hosted on Google?
Well, it doesn't have to be.
But it can be.
It can be cached on Google.
It can be cached on Google. You get free CDN from them. The chat room is going to go nuts because we're going to get back into AMP and Leo's confessions.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, you know what? I've come to terms with AMP. I'm okay with AMP now.
Until they took away your voice
response.
It's
one more indignity I have to suffer from Google.
Better or worse than instant articles?
One of the reasons I've kind of gotten over it, I wasn't clear, but I've really verified this for myself, that AMP is compliant in the sense that so I didn't like, for instance, that it doesn't use the IMG tag for an image. It uses AMP-IMG, right? But the way it handles it is browser invisible, right? So it's in a CSS. It's a CSS extension. So your browser still will use the image tag if you're not in AMP land.
Right.
And so I don't have as much problem with that. That's just using CSS in effect.
Right.
I still think it's a little bit of a power grab from Google, and I really don't like it that if you want to be at the top of Google's mobile search results now, you have to be an AMP page.
I think
that's right.
Google should set a standard for speed, and however you get to that standard, you should be able to be there and be promoted as being fast.
Yahoo, I search for Obama, I get a Yahoo News story, which I think is not AMP'd. No, in fact, that's nice. It pushes me to an ad. For Yahoo's
install the Yahoo app.
But then there's the carousel, and I have to go now below the carousel, below
they
the
say
knowledge
they'll
graph.
They put a few stories above.
Below the profiles.
To get to the
real
search
results.
This is
all Google content, and now here's a search result.
I agree.
And then Twitter. Yeah. And then the rest of the search results, which used to be the Wikipedia, the Atlantic, Politico, those used to be on top.
Yes.
If I were at the Atlantic, I'd be peeved.
Yeah.
Because, it's not AMP content. Sorry, Atlantic.
And the other problem
is
that if the Atlantic does have in that list, wherever it is, an AMP page, the blue link doesn't send to it yet.
I'm not following.
Blue links don't send to AMP yet.
Blue links, meaning in the regular search results.
The regular search results.
Oh, so
just the carousel.
So as you follow links.
And AMP is a standard that Google has authored, right?
Yes.
That anyone could implement anyway.
Yes.
And if a page is AMP compliant, then it's fast.
If it's AMP compliant, yes.
Right. So tell me about the power grab. You feel like Google is
right there is Google using its monopoly in search, and it's not a monopoly, but it's
reauthoring of tags, right?
Well, to favor sites that use a Google technology. It's not a web standard; it's a Google technology.
It's a Google standard,
But
right, I understand what you're saying.
But if I'm doing a regular website, which I am,
right,
and I don't go all in on AMP, I don't show up till several scrolls down on the search result.
Right.
Is that,
if you're
the Atlantic, I'd be a little peeved. That's pressuring the Atlantic to buy the Google.
I mean, you're not forcing people to use Google. I mean, Google defines the standard. It's the same as like robots to text, right? I mean, like, you know, Google has, or meta tags, they have suggestions for how to write these things, which everybody does.
But it doesn't affect search results.
That's true. Their argument, and I don't know, their argument is, we know these pages are fast. We know these pages are going to be a great user experience, right? So we're doing it for...
Initially,
Google doesn't gain anything intrinsically by someone else implementing the AMP
tags.
Yeah,
it does. Well, okay, so here's why Google does. Because what it is a response to ad blocking. So normal users, once the web got bogged down by crap ad tech, said, well, screw that. We're just going to block ad tech. I don't want it. That's screwing me up. And that, as an ad tech company, terrify Google.
I see.
So they said, oh, well, in lieu of using ad blockers, what if we made the web fast anyway?
What if we gave you fast ads?
Right.
Right. So that's in their interest, certainly,
it's
to encourage fast ads.
In their economic interest. And they're using, in my opinion, and I'm not going to testify in any court case on this, but in my opinion, they're using their monopoly, and this is exactly what antitrust laws protect against, their monopoly in one arena, search, to leverage business in another arena, in this case advertising. And they do it all the time. They do it with YouTube. They say they don't, but anyway.
I think we need a faster web. I think we ruined the web. I think that Google put out a standard because nobody else put it out. However, in the implementation, yes, they were, I think, a bit deaf to the implications. Now, what's happening, I don't know if you saw this, I don't have it in the rundown, but Le Monde, I think it was, put up a very detailed review of how Instant Articles is working for them and how they've not lost traffic, but they're getting more on Facebook, but they're not lost, and how it works, and how the monetization is working. There's all this thing.
Which publication was it?
I think it was Le Monde. My pronunciation is bad, I apologize. Mm-hmm. So I think the same thing is necessary with AMP, to really get some numbers back and find out what's happening to the publishers. And when I've talked to publishers about this, they say, jury out. We'll see how this affects our business. We'll see how it affects our traffic. But generally, it is for them, too, the only weapon they have against ad blockers.
Yeah.
It's to speed up the damn pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I understand that. I don't know what the answer is. Ad blocking, obviously, is bad for a lot of content creators. So.
So, yes, this is becoming This Week in AMP.
No, we're done. Do you want to talk about Facebook?
Sure.
Facebook joins WhatsApp in dropping BlackBerry support, followed by, without Facebook...
What took them so long?
Without Facebook, your smartphone platform is dead.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
Those two articles, it's kind of a 1-2 punch. Ewan Spence, who's great, I like Ewan, I follow him, writing for Forbes, says the news yesterday that Facebook is dropping support for BlackBerry 10... shouldn't come as a surprise, but it's the death knell. And we know this from Windows Phone. If your app is not on the platform, and it's an app people want, they're not going to use the platform.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what hurt Windows Phone was a lack of, you know, Instagram's there now, but it wasn't there for a while. And a lot of things aren't there, including my bank's apps aren't on Windows Phone. But BlackBerry 10, I mean, even BlackBerry has moved to Android.
Why would anyone buy a Windows phone?
Actually, HP's making a very interesting product, which is a Windows phone. They announced this at Mobile World Congress that uses Windows Continuum technology to turn into a laptop. They even sell kind of an inexpensive laptop-like docking port. So you can imagine in the enterprise, instead of issuing you a computer, I'll issue you this phone.
Yeah.
And then you have at your desk, your home office, you have one of those docking stations. And at the remote office, they have docking stations.
And soon I issue a little pendant that you wear.
Right. Your computer. It's a step into that direction.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. So it's a corporate phone.
It's a corporate phone. I can't imagine that. Unless you're just a Windows fan, I can't imagine as an end user you saying, "Oh, I want a Windows phone." And, you know, in its day, it was very impressive, but it's become less so over time. You know, frankly, I still wonder why people like you use an iPhone. Oh, you don't use an iPhone.
No,
an iPhone.
No iPhones
on this show.
No,
it's funny because I did use an iPhone for quite some time. When the 6S Plus came out, it had great battery life. I've been using it since it came out in November. And I was using the Apple Watch with it. But as soon as the Galaxy S7 came out and I started using it, I went, oh, I forgot how good this is.
Yeah.
This is in the rundown.
Yeah, no, we should talk about it. This is Facebook.
Yeah, this is a Facebook story.
It's a picture that you wouldn't see on Facebook unless you're a friend of a woman giving birth. She posted it on her face. Is this the full picture?
No.
There's more?
There's a lot more.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a graphic picture. She's giving birth, but you know what? It's a beautiful picture.
Birth is messy, you guys.
And it was for her friends, right? It was for friends and family.
It was a closed group. Was it a birth group in New York?
It's actually, as I see it, an amazing picture.
It is really an amazing photo.
Facebook went into her, what she thought, and this was her mistake, was her, don't keep scrolling down, Jason, because it does get graphic. But what she thought was her private group and took it out. But of course, little reminder, it ain't your private group.
It's Facebook. Their orthodoxy about nipples is just amazing to me.
Haven't they given up, though, on the breastfeed? They don't block breastfeeding anymore.
I thought that had changed.
I think they changed.
They sort of had loosened up on that.
This is extremely graphic. She's giving birth, but you see the umbilical cord.
It's called life.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, I do.
I follow several trans, like female-to-male trans folks on Instagram. And so before top surgery, all of their photos are like this.
Yeah.
And afterward, same person.
Isn't that sad?
Shirtless.
That says something. Doesn't that say something?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But that's the world we live in. It is Facebook's platform. It is not a public platform.
No, that's true.
And I think in a way these things are good to remind people as much as you might think, it's not a public service. This is a private company. And
now Google Photos, I wonder what Google Plus's policy is, and what's Google Photos is truly your space and your photos.
They would never, I don't think, remove a photo from your Google Photos.
So.
That's your private stuff.
Yeah,
on the other hand, Google Plus, they do have rules, they're a little more flexible.
There's got to be a lot of body parts stored up in the private Google Photos.
Oh, yeah.
But as Facebook points out, most of the time a picture won't be pulled unless somebody complains.
Right.
They don't have the manpower to go through all those.
Well, they have Watson to find automated.
Yeah.
Yeah. The AI is getting very, very good at recognizing photos. Mm-hmm.
She's a teacher, a lactation consultant. She was blocked. Facebook message, she says, showed me the picture, said it violated Facebook's standards of nudity, then went on to talk about how some photos are sexually explicit. This is not. It then prompted me to remove any other photos that contained nudity. The two on the prompt screen were me wearing my baby in a carrier fully clothed. That's what's wrong with these automated systems.
Yep.
Is flesh, you know, it's not necessarily easily detected. After she affirmed that none of her other photos contained nudity, she was allowed back on the site and the group. I mean, I don't know what to say about that, except if you want to have a private group, you should do it somewhere else than Facebook. Maybe, yeah? I don't know. It's difficult.
It's tough. This is a tough call. The people are on Facebook. Your friends are on Facebook. If I made a secret or a private group on Facebook, I would assume, you know,
that it's private.
That it's private.
Private. And that you're not trying to show it to the
world. And unless somebody in the group.
You're right. I guess that should be allowed, huh?
Right?
And if somebody complains, then that's what you ought to expect is the group to govern itself.
Right.
But I guess Facebook doesn't want to get in the middle of all that. What if one member says you shouldn't do this in this group, and the rest of the group says leave the group, and then you know what does Facebook do? Help you kill that person's account?
Right.
Have you played with Masquerade yet?
No.
Oh,
this is the. It's better on iPhone. I'm sorry.
My
fault. It's better on iPhone. Okay, so this is called Masquerade. MSQ. Let's do it with you.
Okay.
MSQRD. So get your face in there now.
Oh.
Yeah, I have
So your face is on my head. Okay? I'll take a picture of it.
Speaking
so
of can, trans.
That is.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously.
No, actually, it's not working fully on Android.
I'm transitioning right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, right. Oh.
Wow.
Now we can move to another. See, I broke it. It's permanently.
Can you turn it around?
It's permanently. I don't know if you can see that. We do have camera operators. They probably can zoom. Oh, it's all messed up now. It's really confused.
Jason Howell and I did a face mash, I think was the name of the app.
Yeah, face
similar,
mash, yeah.
On all but Android, and it was equally as horrifying.
Yeah.
No offense, Jason.
This it crashes Android, so it's in some sort of weird crash mode right now. But I think it's sufficiently horrific that you can see. Anyway, Facebook just bought this company. And it's kind of a similar effect. You've probably seen this in Snapchat, right? Where you can overlay stuff on your...
So you can also just put...
I'll show you. Yeah, what I have to do is force quit it and then go back into it. There's a bug.
You know, I bought an iPod Touch so I could try apps out on iOS.
This is perfect for iPod Touch.
I did too.
I mean...
So here, Jeff. Now Jeff is a little furry. Dog. he's a gorilla. He's got a mustache. There, you can see it. I think you look good in that. That's a good look for you, huh? So you could see what you would look like with a mustache.
So it's you take the picture of the video. Do you send it? Is
yeah.
It's a messaging?
You can share it. In fact, you guess where you can share it? Instagram or Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I think that was before. But the point is, I think that this is, they couldn't get Snapchat. So what you're going to see is Facebook starting to build out their messaging platform to be as Snapchat-y as possible.
Right.
It's fun. It's fun. Mark Zuckerberg posted a picture of himself as Iron Man. That is kind of a weird choice.
Yeah.
Well, no, because he's
he wants to be
Jarvis.
Tony Stark.
Well,
but he's not.
I was going to say, he is a billionaire eccentric.
It's too late. Elon Musk is Tony Stark. You can't be Tony Stark.
I think that's fair.
I don't know what the price was. It's a Russian company.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that this technology is so widespread now. I don't think it's so hard to do because I see it everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
So I hope they got $1 billion.
Do you Snapchat, Leo, on a regular?
You know, I know, and I have it, and I know how to use it, and I have.
Your father and I, than I am.
But
I'm
my
so
big problem
old,
with Snapchat.
I cannot even figure out how to use it. I'm like,
no, and I asked my son about that. And he said, "Well, everybody knows how to use it." Well, I said, "There's no rules. It doesn't explain."
He said,
"But I think that generation. It's the same thing with Minecraft. Part of for an app to succeed with a young generation, Jake, you can confirm or deny this." I think it has to have a component of peer learning so that there's value for Snapchat of having your buddy say, oh, no, let me show you how to do that.
Do this thing. Yeah.
And then you have this bond.
Right.
And you're not going to tell everybody that you just didn't know that.
There's an investment. Right.
Jake, do you use Snapchat?
He's too old.
Oh, he's gone.
He's off Snapchatting.
Well, I read that BuzzFeed piece about how teens really use, which I'm always a little bit skeptical. This was a couple months ago, but I still was like, oh, I don't. This is beyond my ability.
Snapchat's fun.
Do you do stories?
Mm-hmm. That's my problem.
Yeah.
Is I'm a broadcaster, and the real reason I don't use it is because after 24 hours it goes away, and my whole life. Is built around
things.
Making stuff that you keep.
Permanent. Yep.
I mean, admittedly, there's a certain amount of fish wrap to the stuff we do.
Because it's
but,
ridiculous. Yeah. Twitter, yeah, it's there. But when do you ever
go
back?
Gone. Right. It goes
gone in the mind.
It's true.
The MSQRD team is young.
Really?
Yeah. Eugene Nevyevgen, Sergey Gonchar are 23. The CEO is Eugene Zatapayakin, and he's 30. And they have other companies as well, and it was just one of those things. As often happens, they launched before Christmas. They took off in Eastern Europe. You know how that is.
Yep.
And they were purchased by Facebook in March. When they had
good for them.
They had 16 million users when they were acquired.
Yeah.
But
their servers are ready.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they'll move immediately to a Facebook infrastructure. That's a nice.
Well,
I like
you don't
that story.
Announce the deal until you've done that.
Yes. Yes. They were two other companies bidding against them, so that's why I think we don't know the number. I'm sure it was good. Twitter is shutting down Emoji Tracker. That's annoying. Emoji
you just
Tracker.
Get annoyed anytime anybody shuts down anything.
I'm annoyed. I'm just peeved. I'm taking over from you now.
Twitter's got a bad track record.
Now that I'm here, I decided maybe
you
there's
got the
something
New York
about
spirit.
The
New York water. Yeah.
Crank.
Vetching.
Emoji tracker we used, it was the one that said that would rank emoji use on Twitter. It was really cool. Remember we showed all the
real time.
The most in real time. It was really cool. But Twitter platform operations sent them an email saying, "Hello from Twitter. During our recent audit of our developer platform, our records show the account associated with this email address currently has elevated access to the streaming API. No, you can't do it."
That no longer exists. You can pay.
Probably it's expensive. Oh, GNIP, right, because they have the fire hose. So is that what it essentially was, that they said, you want to use a fire hose, you go to GNIP?
Yeah, and I don't think that GNIP offered the elevated streaming, offered everything the elevated streaming did. But this is like an indie developer who open sourced, this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just a kind of a fun project. So,
well, but it was more than that, because the emoji committee on the Unicorn Consortium, there is an emoji committee.
There is.
Yep.
Well, they brought us dumplings.
Yes,
we
didn't
have dumplings, right?
Thanks to Jenny Eight Lee.
Jenny Eight Lee says we used Emoji Tracker. We wouldn't even consider. A big factor in the new emoji criteria is whether we'd expect to find it above the median in Emoji Tracker. So,
wow, that's too bad.
There is at some level, I think. Let's see what you think about this, Gina. I would even argue an ethical responsibility that if you have this data. That's the voice of the people. I don't mean at an individual level, but I mean at an aggregate level. And in an age when AI can analyze all this, and you can use sensors and do all this thing, shouldn't that data be open to us, the people who made it?
Yes, we've been saying that all along.
It's an old-fashioned way of thinking about it, but yes.
That's
yes,
what I am.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. No, me too. Me too. I absolutely believe that, too.
If I were Hugo Chavez, I'd nationalize it. That's what I'd do. I'm telling you, when Bernie gets in, we're going to nationalize Twitter. We're going to nationalize Twitter. We're just taking it over. But that would be a good thing to nationalize, right?
It's true.
Wouldn't it?
It's true.
Sorry, Jack. We want it.
Well,
eminent domain.
Yeah, you're of the people.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I started to think up is I was just so annoyed that I couldn't get past more than 3,200 of my own tweets. My own tweets. I'm not even talking about the tweets of the world.
How do you use the API?
Yeah, I'm using just this, straight basic REST API, which pages back 3,200 tweets.
Okay. And you get all the tweets. You don't get a sample of tweets.
You get just 3,200. So if you have posted more than 3,200 tweets, then that's I'm only getting that many. Right. And most people at this point, the company's been around for 10 years. Who are any of user have more than 3,200 tweets.
In fact, Twitter just had its 10th anniversary.
That's right. They did. Yes.
And everybody was posting their first tweet. My first tweet was actually totally appropriate. I surrender, Twitter. You win. Was my first tweet.
My first tweet.
That's totally appropriate. 10 years ago.
My first tweet was, okay, I'll try Twitter again.
There you go. Yeah. You and I. Yeah. I'm telling you, great minds.
Mine was home, time for a nap. I had just gotten home from South by Southwest, and I said,
that's what everyone's using.
I will just sign up. Okay, fine.
Did you read Jack's interview at the Bloomberg Business, the future of Twitter, and in-depth
conversation? I've read how many stories about the future of Twitter can I read?
I know. And I don't know if Jack really knows what the future of Twitter is.
It's a puddle.
It's the future of Twitter. Is that what he said? It's a puddle?
Yeah, I guess I had missed this. There was a Periscope video of a puddle on the street in England that went viral,
where everybody was
watching the puddle.
You're watching people, what they're doing with the puddle and walking around the puddle.
So that was interesting. It was interesting that he
It was getting 20,000 simultaneous viewers. Total of 650,000 live views of a puddle. And apparently Twitter was really in on this. Jack says, I was watching the puddle. It wasn't even the people in the puddle or what they were doing. It was the fact that I was watching with other people and I was connected to the audience and I could actually talk with them. Is that the puddle? No, that's just my phone. It's not important.
Yeah, he really focused on the fact that Twitter is this real-time togetherness.
You're at the puddle.
What a weird thing for everybody to look at.
Well, I think the point he was trying to make is that even the most mundane, you know, even if there isn't a big news event, like somebody important dying or whatever, an attack or whatever, that even the most mundane thing, like a puddle, can become a news event. And that's what people do on the internet. When there isn't news, they make news.
Right.
You know, the dress or whatever. And I sort of get that. It was just
The puddle was a weird analogy, but what he ends up saying, I think, is accurate. Twitter can be distilled down to the simplicity of here's what's going to happen in the world. Here's what's happening right now. And I agree. That's what Twitter is.
And here's the funny thing about Twitter is Twitter thought it was going to be here's what's happening with you instead of turning to here's what's happening in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
And that's amazing.
Right.
And
which is different
to me,
than Facebook.
We didn't know it was going to be a news service. It's a news service.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't even imagine that unless you got critical mass. And you wouldn't, as a startup, just say, well, of course we're going to have, you know, 800 million. Actually, they only have 300 million users, but we're going to have the right 300 million, I guess.
Right.
Let's see.
Jeff, I'm interested to know what you think about Matter becoming its own company. Because you're the medium.
Speaking of, speaking of Ev changing his mind.
Yes.
I have the greatest respect for Ev, but I imagine working for Ev is, you know, what's Ev thinking today?
Right.
Well, how do you wake up?
Right.
Or Donald Trump wears the white hat if he's happy and the red hat if he's not. Those who see him only in the red hat these days. So I think that there was a time when Medium wanted to be a content company, a publisher itself, a platisher, God help us. And I think that they're not in that as much anymore. They're getting prominent people to write on and use Medium
very successfully,
and that's working. My old agent Kate Lee is doing a great job of that, and others. But I think the idea that they had to own content, they had to prime the pump, I think they're less into. So he didn't kill it. He didn't jettison it. It's owned 100% by Ev Williams. It's now a content laboratory. So I don't know what the hell that means, but I didn't know what the hell Twitter meant. I didn't know what the hell Matter meant either.
Yeah.
So it could be just a way that you kind of save face to keep it alive, or it could be that they mean it and they're going to try new things. I don't know.
Is Matter the parent company of Medium?
No, Matter was a Kickstarter backed journalistic magazine-y thing that
I didn't even
Medium
know
bought.
It.
Oh, I thought it was just a publication on Medium.
It was.
I didn't realize it was rooted in a Kickstarter.
Bobby Johnson was one of the founders of The Guardian. And they started it separately, and they did a whole big Kickstarter raise. So it was controversial when they got bought. Like, hello, I gave you money. Where's mine?
Yeah.
But that's happened more than once.
That happened with Oculus Rift, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so they've done some neat things. But I take it back in the sense that of course, Medium does have its own content products insofar as our good friend Age. This is simply Age talking.
Yes.
Former Wired, former Newsweek, writes about technology.
Stephen Levy.
Well, I love Stephen Levy's back channel.
So he's his back channel.
That's
he is on staff. That is an owned and operated channel.
Like Matter, but not
like Matter.
Not Matter. Yeah.
Right. So they still do have content. I mean, it's a confusing mess. They still do have content, and they're moving this off to be a laboratory. So who knows? Ev doesn't know.
Yeah.
But that's the joy of Ev.
He has said that we might start doing advertising on this.
Yes.
So there is a plan, perhaps, to monetize it.
Well, I'm just betting. My guess is, Gina, that they're saying, okay, this is fun. We're not going to kill you. Let's see if you can't make a go of it.
Did Ev spin Matter out, or did they spin themselves out? I mean,
Ev spun Matter out. It's still owned by Ev, but it's operating separately from Medium.
But it's on Medium. It's using Medium the platform.
Yeah.
Still.
So I'm
that's very confusing.
It's very confusing.
And it's not a website, they say. It's not a website.
Right. Because nobody wants to be a website anymore.
It's on the web.
Nobody
you look at it in the browser, but it's not a website.
You don't want to be an app. You don't want to be a website. You want to complain and kvetch about being on the platforms. You just want to be unhappy.
Don't let the internet name your boat. I'm just saying. This is never a good idea.
You know what? We're starting the new show in New York. Why don't we let the internet name the show?
Oh, we should. And what a name we'll get. So the British government decided to let the internet suggest a name for a $287 million polar research ship. And the name, ladies and gentlemen, RRS Boaty McBoatface.
The wisdom of the crowd.
The government suggested the names like the Shackleton, the RSS Endeavor, Falcon. No.
More dignified options.
Boaty McBoatface. This is, as you might remember, very much in the same vein as the Slovak bridge naming in 2012. They actually, lawmakers had to override the public's vote. They wanted, the public decided to name it after Chuck Norris. A year earlier in Austin, Texas, people tried to name the city's waste management service Fred Durst. Although Limp Bizkit would have been better for a waste management service. So it's 4chan is the problem, I think. Anyway.
So we are to be Twiggy McTwigface.
Twiggy McTwigface.
I think not a bad name.
A little hard to say, but.
Incidentally, the guy who proposed the name Bodie McBoatface is a public relations guy and former BBC employee. He tweeted it, and now his latest tweet is, "I'm terribly sorry about all of this. My apology." So I hope they name it Bodie McBoatface. It's not over yet. The polls close April 16th, so you have time to change it to Shackleton or Endeavor. But
it's still the most loved all time, the most loved today. Like, people are still voting.
The problem is,
Bodie McBoatface.
There's so many people are voting. The website keeps crashing. Here's one: Euphasia Superba. Vivian Fuchs, Deep Blue Explorer. There's quite a few of these.
Yeah. But look at the most loved.
Overall. Let's see. Number one, RRS Bodie McBoatface. Mm-hmm. And I presume Henry Worsley is another joke, probably a British joke. David Attenborough, that'd be a good name. Yeah. Or the RRS is bloody cold here. Usain Boat. Good name.
That's good.
I like that.
Usain Boat is pretty great.
Bodie McBoatface, the return of Bodie McBoatface. Well,
Bonus Prime.
That's great.
Internet jokesters.
RRS Boat.
Thanks for all the fish.
I like big boats and I cannot lie. RRS What Iceberg. Remember, it is going to be in the Antarctic. Wow. Most loved today. This is actually, you know what? They're getting a lot of attention.
They are.
You know what? Go ahead. Go with it. Name it that.
Can I vote?
Yeah.
Can I heart Bodie McBoatface? I did.
You.
I voted.
Thank you for voting.
Another problem. There was no sign up. There was no registration.
Right.
I just voted.
How many scripts are just hitting that URL?
I just voted. The website is nameourship.nerc.ac. UK, if you'd like to cast your vote. NERC.
Go to NERC.
Let's see. Okay. Anything else? This is fun. I don't know what time it is because I can't understand the clock.
It is now 6:30, approaching 6:30.
So that would be 3:30 our time. So this is a good time to start wrapping up here. Last-minute stories in the year.
Well, I think we do have to talk about
The Happy Meal from the CUNY. By the way, I am also wearing CUNY swag. This is a nice hoodie. Thanks. Was it Simon who gave me
Simon,
this?
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you, Simon.
You are now a capital J journalist.
Yes.
This is in honor of the CUNY School of Journalism team that's playing in the March Madness NCAA finals, I hear. That's what they told me. So
so I find it. All right, Leo.
Yes. Oh, you want to talk about porn.
Yeah, I've never seen.
He's giving me the look.
I've never seen.
Why am I the expert on this?
So I'm
Gina,
saying I haven't seen.
What do you think of VR porn, Gina?
Welcome back, Gina.
Yeah, thanks.
So Pornhub, which is a very well-known, I hear, very well-known, popular. It's kind of the YouTube of porn, I think.
Yeah.
They have added a virtual reality section for both Oculus and Google
Cardboard.
But
here's the thing. Here's the thing. Just in theory, it's like the problem I have with interviews.
By the way, Pornhub is the 65th most visited site on the internet.
That's
what we created. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Right? Because it's not, you're not in a space again. Unless you're in an orgy, maybe. But then
yeah.
I don't get it. Is it just because it's new?
Enthusiasts will try it because it's new.
Yes, okay. I was trying to bait him. It's just not working. I'm trying my best.
Okay, he's being incredibly restrained. I'm really impressed.
All right. Just research.
Theory.
And I have a Gear VR.
Yeah, okay.
And a Samsung Galaxy S6. And it turns out there are a number of providers of adult content who actually make, VR video. And it's scarily realistic, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that good or bad?
But is it fun? I mean, is it?
Well, do you think porn is fun?
Well, sure. Let's assume you think porn is fun.
If you
it's
think
fine.
Porn
can,
is fun,
we can speak like adults. I mean, you know, whatever.
If you think porn is fun, you will quite enjoy this.
Really?
Because
it's
immersive. The whole idea. This is what VR is all about, right? It's putting you in the middle of the action.
But it's so not like
as if you're one of the players.
As if you're
well,
one of the
usually,
players, yeah.
So the ones I've seen, the way they shoot it is they, and actually, in my mind, I always am thinking about the performer who's got something strapped on their head, because what they do is, you're a performer in it,
yeah.
And it's on your face apparently because you
of what you're seeing.
And so what you're seeing is because you can see your own body.
Oh.
You can look down and go, whoa!
But what happens when things go off the rails? Like when the thing that you wouldn't have done happens?
Yeah.
Like that's the part
he or she, and by the way, that's what's really interesting is to put yourself in the female perspective for a man.
Right.
And I have a new appreciation.
You think?
For... I don't know. How do you talk about this in a way that's not weird?
It's okay.
So, I'm enjoying this.
Here's what it is: normally when you're watching a movie or we're used to it now with video games, but when you're watching a movie or television show or adult content, the director is choosing what you see.
Right.
In a video game, and you know because you've played video games,
First person shooter, you look around.
Right. You look up, you look down. So. In an adult, now Jason, don't. I think you probably shouldn't. But in an adult environment, you look around. You can see where you are. You can see the space, very much like the video that Jason's showing on the screen. Don't look to the right.
Very nervous right now.
Don't look to the right. Whatever you do. So you can actually look, and you can see the set, and you can see. You can't see the camera because you are the camera.
Right. So it's like a first-person shooter.
Yeah. Literally, sometimes.
Show title.
And do you get to choose? I'm sorry, I haven't tried this much. Do you get to choose which player you want to be? It depends.
No, not the
player,
way this works. So you watch a game. You choose a movie, right? Yeah. So you would be like watching a porn video, except that the difference is that you're the camera, your head is the camera, and you're looking around.
Okay.
The only thing you really can't see is your own face.
Right.
But you can look down and see your shoulder. So
you get to be one player. There's one choice. You are one person in this interaction.
Well, how would you be more than one person?
Well, I mean, like, you know, could you be... Because you were saying you could be a man, a woman, or a woman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you have to pick the video
you have to pick
watching.
The video you want. Right.
I think Gina just wrote a new application. Yeah.
I'm just curious. How does that work? Like, because, you know, with... You know, there's various flavors. I mean, is it like, oh, be this person in this scenario?
Well, yeah, you could take any content. That's not even
really
adult content.
This is really hard to discuss without.
No, you take any content. Without saying it's adult content. Let's say we're taking a walk in the park.
Right.
You pick that walk in the park.
Right.
Because it's not live. You're picking a pre-recorded walk in the park, but they're recording it, like with the Theta 360. They're recording it in such a way that you can't not walk. Because you're walking, that's what it is.
Right.
But you can look around as you're walking, right?
Right.
You can see what's behind you, what's in front of you, up and down.
But if you were walking a dog in the park, would you get the choice to be the dog or the human in that scenario?
No, you get to be the human.
Unless somebody makes
a video of you as a dog, and then you're experiencing it as a dog.
Right.
See, this is exactly, this guy's holding up a three.
Yeah.
So beyond the salacious part of this, there is an interesting experience to be had because you are, in effect, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Does lead in ways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're safe now. Sorry about
that. You handled that. That was good.
That was very good.
It actually is a larger discussion, and sometimes really big, about what the experience of immersive video is versus the experience of a passive viewer.
Yes.
Right.
And really that's it, is that you're looking around. Now, some of these VR tools like the Vive, which will give you hand controls, may even give you, you know, one of the reasons I think you get sick in VR is you don't control your motion very well.
Right.
So you're being moved around in ways that you don't fully control. And augmented reality doesn't have that problem because you are walking and moving. And so your movement controls what you see. With VR helmets, it's really your head movement only that's controlling what you what you see. So that's a little bit of a disconnect.
So it has to work with the narrative. I mean, like, there's a sequence of events that happens, right?
You're in a movie, but you're choosing
the point of view, but you're not choosing what's happening.
Right.
And things are happening whether you're looking at them or not. It's a little bit disconcerting, I would imagine.
It can be. It's also very interesting. And I think that's why it's interesting for news, because...
Which is seriously why I ask. Because it makes you test the ideas here.
Yeah, now you're seeing... So I watched the Times stuff, and the Times, the first thing the Times did, they did other stuff, but the first thing the Times did was about children displaced by war.
Right.
And it, and this is probably because of my training, I don't think so much about what I'm seeing as the mechanics of producing it. And so the first thing I do is I look around and say, well, where's the reporter? So this child is going through her day in a bombed out house, and she's making breakfast and stuff. And I'm thinking, what did they do? Did they set up a camera?
They did.
And they said, okay, I'm going to leave the room, just lead your normal life.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a little strange in terms of news
gathering. There were pictures of them kind of lurking over to the edge so they could see what was going on, but they weren't in the image because the image is there. I think that's wrong.
I see that all the time. You know, I see a movie, like I'm watching Les Miserables, the movie, and I'm thinking about the playback and the crew and like, well, was she singing that now or is she listening to sound?
Right.
So that's just me. And so when I see these news stories, I always think that's bad. That's wrong. That's staged.
Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah. And so I think it'd be much smarter as a reporter to be in the – but then you have another problem, which you're always supposed to taught not to do, which is you're in the story.
But maybe
but that's what this means. That's what immersive means, is you're in the story. So it opens up a whole bunch of interesting things. And in the adult context, I think it is very interesting. I don't it's not something I would do regularly, but
it doesn't seem like it's going to take over just regular watching a movie.
But the question is, does it potentially increase empathy? I mean,
yes, that I would agree with. And just as maybe if you're watching Children of War. No, well, I have empathy for women in porn. Seriously.
I appreciate that. I mean, I don't do porn. But
no, I know. But I mean, no, that was actually a very interesting experience because it was like I'm kind of being abused here. To be frank.
That's why we love you, Leo.
That, I mean, it was like, no, stop that. No, no. Anyway.
So fascinating.
This is the conversation I always wanted to avoid, and I managed to.
I'm sure my school is very proud of me right now.
For a long time.
We're all right, Red, I think.
But
so.
It is germane to what your school is up to, and it's very much part of what I think auteurs of virtual reality are going to have to really think about is what does immersive video mean? What is the role of the auteur, whether as journalist or just a photographer? What is the role? And in the case of adult entertainment, you're the performer, which is a really weird situation. I guess it would be as if you're in a play. Let's say you're doing a VR of a play, and you're the actor. You're one of the actors in the play. You would have the experience of the play as a performer in it, not as an audience member.
Right.
And that's what happens in adult.
And that is a huge opportunity to change things. But it's fundamentally changing the idea of storytelling, the idea of presence, the idea of photography,
point of view, everything,
point of view, all that. Mm-hmm. So is it going to be huge? I don't know.
I think it is.
You think it is?
I think it is.
I don't mean just porn. I mean 360.
Actually, I don't know what the future of adult content is, but I think in general, immersive video is huge. But it's such a new medium. We are just in the infancy of what do you do and how does it work? But I think saying empathy is very interesting. I hadn't really thought about that, but absolutely.
That's what I heard you say. Yeah.
Yeah. That is one thing you would absolutely get out of that is this sense of empathy. You also, the way that Samsung was selling its 360 camera is as a way to go with, this is the children of war, which, I mean, it's just such a horrific story. And I do think that you would gain some empathy from this. I'm sure that's what the New York Times was thinking. The Samsung was selling it as, well, you can't be in Paris with your friends, but they can walk around with their gear camera, and you can wear your Gear VR at home and have the experience of walking down the Champs-Élysées.
There was that woman on Google Plus, I think her name was M. Monica, who was not very mobile. She had some health conditions.
Perfect example.
So she would, there were cases where you could take a photographer in a canoe and say, oh, can you go to the left there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
I'm very bullish on this. I think it's phenomenal. And even if you don't direct the action, you're with your friends. And if it's in real time and you're talking to them, I mean, imagine if you were here, sitting here in VR. You'd be part of the action. I think it's great.
I'm all in. Should we do a VR episode?
Well, I've actually been really intrigued. And once the cameras get better, we will do that.
That's cool.
Yeah, we will do that.
I almost kind of want to just be the silent observer, like have the reporter in it and have it going on, but have just someone else. You know, if someone wanted to be at Twig, you know, they could sit right here and
be
able to look at us.
This is so much aimed one way.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example.
How would you rethink in a true round table, you know, Charlie Rose's table?
Be very different. You'd be in the middle of the table, maybe. One of the first VR things they did was one of the first presidential debates, the Republican debates. And I was amazed. So it started before the debate. You're in the back of the room. And I'm looking around. It's as if you're in the audience. But it's weird because I think the people who were in the audience didn't realize that they were on camera because it's just a little ball.
Right.
And I'm looking down. I'm actually looking over somebody's shoulder. I can see him looking at his phone. There's a television camera guy next to me who's waiting because he's going to tell his debate. He's chewing gum and he's going, nah. And you're looking around. It's like you're an invisible character sitting there. Then it turned out they had many cameras. So I thought this is going to be terrible because I'm in the back of the auditorium and they're way down there. But then they switched to, really interestingly, a backstage camera. And they've done this a couple of times with the debates. It's very interesting to be backstage watching the candidates as they're introduced.
That sounds really neat. That was an amazing experience.
And you really felt like you see, you know, Carly Fiorina kind of adjust herself and gear up to go on stage. I actually really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so I think there's
huge opportunity to be part there. Is this the video from the debate? I guess it is, yeah. Opportunity to be part of in an event in a way that we don't normally get to be. And I think that's exciting. Hey, let's take a break. Do you want to do – we don't have a, you know, what was that change log thing?
I don't have a change log. I do have a tip.
You have a tip?
Sure.
And you have a number? All right. I'll come up with a tool. But before we do that, this is a great time if you're in the market for a new phone to go to Gazelle.com. Apple's announced a new phone. There's really great new Android phones. Maybe you want a Galaxy S7. Hey, that's an $800 phone. Here's how you can help pay for it. And I know a lot of people who do this. They like to have the latest thing. They go to Gazelle to sell the old one, generate some cash to pay for the new one. You could trade in your old device. You don't even have to commit at this point. You can commit Gazelle, but you don't have to commit. When you go there and get a quote for your device, Gazelle's locked in for 30 days. That means you have 30 days to decide whether you're going to get the new phone, wait for the phone to arrive, transfer your data over, and then click the checkout button, and Gazelle will send you a box. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. In fact, while you're at it, pile in a bunch of stuff. You can get cash, PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card. They bump that up 5%. Gazelle. It is easily the best way to sell your used gadgets, and they buy a whole bunch of different stuff. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. They can resell those for parts. And if you can't remove the data or you forget to, don't worry. They wipe the data before they sell it. They protect you. You can also buy at Gazelle, and I like this. They take the best stuff that they buy, and they sell it back on Gazelle. Now, here's why this is a good time to do that, because they're getting a lot of new stuff. iPhone 6S is coming in for people who want to get the new iPhoners. 6S Pluses. There's iPads. There's Samsung Galaxy phones, and they have a wide range to choose from. They always put every device through a rigorous 30-point inspection to make sure that the screen's not scratched and everything works. They also back it by a 30-day return policy. What's nice is these will work on all the major carriers, but you never are getting an extension on your carrier contract. There's no contract. So go to Gazelle.com, see what your device is worth, and then check out the selection of certified pre-owned devices. By the way, they are now offering financing, which I love, from a firm. And you can do that at checkout. You just check the box, provide some basic information. Approval is instant. You can pay in 3, 6, or 12 months using bank transfer or check or debit card. Just check that box that says financing with a firm when you check out. You can also buy a 12-month warranty on cell phones against water damage, cracked screens, hardware defects, that kind of thing from insurance. And they do offer help processing claims and so forth at Gazelle.com. The best value on certified pre-owned devices and the best dollars for your pre-owned devices when you sell them to Gazelle. Gazelle. Gazelle.com. Go there today. Gina Trapani has a tip of the week for us.
I do. This is courtesy of my alma mater, Lifehacker. So I think I've talked about what a big fan of Google Keep I am. I really
like
Google Keep.
I didn't make you defend Nick Denton. I just realized.
You didn't.
That's right. Damn it. Go ahead.
Probably for the better. We could talk about that over dinner.
That's the First Amendment. I understand.
I'm in the tank, you know.
What are you going to do? It's the First Amendment. But that couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I just go ahead. You have a tip for us?
Tip for us. Google Keep. Great. Such a great app.
I love Google Keep.
It's a great app.
Do you use it with your wife? Do you like
it? I do. We do. We share notes. Yeah. Yeah. Shopping list. Like, this is stuff I need you to, like, pick up on your way home and that kind of thing.
I have it all on here.
I use so, you know, there's a little add checkboxes list. I'm a list maker. That's what I do. Well, there's a voice command. You can say, if you've got, say, a Google Keep note called shopping list.
I do right here.
Or just shopping. Sorry. If it's just called shopping, you could use the voice command, add milk to my shopping list, and Google will just add milk to your
Google,
list.
Add
milk to my shopping
list. Okay, Google.
Stop it. My list is not named shopping list.
Yeah, you have to have a list name that, note name that. So I've got a note called, like, movies to watch, and I could say, okay, Google, add,
but you can have an arbitrary
Carol
name,
to,
right? I could say, add bacon to my Petaluma market list,
yes,
right?
Okay. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that works. So I was very excited when that
that
worked.
Is really nice.
I actually do have a list called shopping.
That's
and
something
we
that's been
it.
On iOS
add
for a long time.
Turkey bacon in your case.
And in fact,
so where does it add it on iOS?
I think the reminders.
Oh, reminders. Yeah.
And then I think you can use location too. Now I know you can with Keep. I don't know if you can save the location, but you can say, when I get to Petaluma market,
that's nice.
Remind me to buy chicken. It's very
Google Reminders does that.
I think it does. I know it has location-based reminders. Yeah.
Really
isn't that
cool.
Nice?
It's so very
you can,
nice.
I do that, you know, when I get to work, remind me to call, you know, Joey and things like
very,
that.
Yeah, that's very, very helpful. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keep, everybody should be using Keep. And
the widget is awesome. I have the widget on my phone.
Oh, I haven't put the widget on the phone.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of notes that I refer to. I just, like, you know.
I didn't do that.
Yeah,
I can do the widget.
It's got a pretty good widget.
I love widgets. I'm all in on the widgets.
You are all in on the widgets.
See, sometimes people think I have my phone screens are kind of busy. Because
they're a little bit busy.
They're like Times Square, isn't it?
I just saw you flip through.
It's like all sorts of stuff.
Packed screens.
Yeah, I have. But those widgets, every one of them. See, that's what I like about as opposed to iOS. I've got information. Like, there's the New York Times, and I have information on here.
The calendar widget is great.
I'm probably showing precious.
Yeah, you're probably.
That's the thing that I really miss the most on iOS is the widgets.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah.
On iOS.
You know. They gotta update their interface. You can't even. They don't have an app drawer. They don't have. You can't have like an icon in more than one place. It can only exist in one folder.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's like the year 2010 or something.
Yeah, it's very limiting.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Don't get me
it's
started.
It's beyond simplicity to limiting.
I would like you to give us a number.
A number,
please. Boaty McBoatface.
Do you have a New York accent?
Jarvis McJarvis face, give me a number.
So I found this. So one of the greatest challenges in advertising is what we call attribution. Did the ad cause this sale? Can I prove that and can I charge for that?
Yes.
So Square.
No one can do that.
Well, just wait. Square has just done a deal with Facebook to integrate. So a local advertiser, for example, can buy an ad through Square and then it does the full cycle. So that if the customer comes in and buys the thing in the store, you know that ad worked on Facebook.
Oh, neato. That's very cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
That's why we use offer codes. That's the same thing as we do
with
offer codes.
Exactly. But now the customer has to go to the effort in that case.
That's right. This way it's automatic.
Use the Twig offer code.
Yeah.
Now, says the Squares and Customer Engagement Lead, quote, the ability to track and close the loop from advertisement to sale, that's the holy grail. That's true. And it rhymes.
And just regular tracking doesn't work for that. Like, just regular link tracking doesn't work. Because the store doesn't feedback, give the information
exactly.
back.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, of course, the larger problem is you decide you're going to go to Bermuda. And you see an ad, and then you go to Wikipedia, and then you go to Travelocity, and then you go here, and then you go there. So who gets the credit?
Right.
It's still never going to be a firm science. But it's interesting to me that this potentially increases the value of Facebook in those sales immensely.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if we could do – we can't really do this because we can't – we don't control the player. That's because they control the transaction.
Yes.
And they can do that. There was no way we could do that because we don't control the player or the transaction. We have really no way of doing that.
Right.
Okay, never mind. I'm not going to do it. But that's why people like us. We don't track their behavior.
Because you can't.
If you could, you would.
If I could, I would. My app is a weather app called Bloom Sky. And actually, I found out about this probably, I think it was an Instagram ad. I hate those ads. I hate it that every 10th picture is an ad.
They seem a lot like they're...
It's annoying.
Very frequent recently.
However, yeah. It worked.
I guess so. Here you are.
The reason was I was looking for a weather app so I could see what it would be like in New York when we came here. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of weather apps. But what Bloom Sky does is it gives you weather cameras. So, for instance... Here's PC Magazine there on Park Avenue. And more than that, it will give you a time lapse. So this is what it looks like right now. But I can say, well, what's the weather been like all day? And we'll actually do a time lapse from these Bloom Sky cameras of the whole day. So you can see.
That's like the old joke in All the President's Men. They sell the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday's mail because you were too stoned to know what it was.
But I like to see the weather from yesterday sometimes. I'm not in Petaluma right now. I could see what it was like.
Because you're from San Francisco, that's why.
Would you miss?
Yeah. Now,
Weather FOMO.
Now, the trick on this is you have to have, it has to be a Bloom Sky base station. They sell these weather stations with cameras built in, but they've got them all over. In fact, I even checked in Petaluma, and there are a lot of people in Petaluma that have these, so I can get... To use a word you might like, a hyperlocal weather forecast.
There you go.
There's that Bloom Sky thing. So this is a time lapse from a Bloom Sky camera in Petaluma earlier today. So I think that's kind of a neat.
Now what you want to do is to show you what it will look like in an hour by using the AI to make a picture.
There's no freaking future. It's just the past. That's the Bloom Sky thing.
These are serious cameras.
Yeah, that's also the weather station.
Oh, that's
so
the
it tells you air quality, UV, temperature, a lot of stuff, wind, and you can go to bloomsky.com and see these. I mean, there's also the website, but unfortunately the Bloom Skies are kind of expensive. They're like $300. I'm really tempted.
They look nice.
Because it'd be kind of cool to see what
you're tempted to buy something you don't need.
Yeah, well, I haven't bought it yet, but I'm very tempted to, because it'd be kind of nice to look at your backyard and see what the weather was.
Yeah, that's true.
You're right. It's weird. It's backwards weather.
It is.
What happened, not what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, they have regular weather in it, too, but I kind of like just looking at the day. And
yeah, the site has some nice.
It's pretty, isn't it?
Yeah, Bloom Sky.
Foliage in autumn foliage in Denver. Looks like
when the camera gets rained on.
It's rain. Mostly just rain. Hey, this has been really fun. We should just do this. Well, let's move Twit to New York.
Move to New York.
I would love to do that.
I don't know
if I get Lisa to go there. How are rents here? They're pretty good, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Very affordable.
No problem
very
at all.
Yeah. Just go out to Staten Island and you'll really get a deal.
I could tell, by the way, that rents were going up because we went to get a slice. When we got in at 2 in the morning, we went to get a slice. That's what you do, right?
Right. Well,
no one can afford to own a pizza place in New York anymore. No. There's no. Where did all the Rays go? They must have moved downtown or something.
Yeah.
There's nothing around here. It's too expensive.
Really? There wasn't a pizza place around here.
If you think about it,
$20
a square foot. You're not going to be able to sell enough pizza to make that worthwhile.
Well, there's no Howard Johnson's on Times Square anymore. You know,
it used to be right. There was a Howard Johnson's.
Yeah.
Wow, Howard
Johnson's. No Nathan's.
No Nathan's anymore. No Papayas.
No Papaya King.
Papaya King.
That's right.
Those were the days. No strip joints. No.
There's still Nathan's in Coney Island, which is where Nathan's should be, just to be clear.
But it used to be on Times Square.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's just the rent. The rent was too much.
And down in the village, the Papaya King is gone.
Oh, that one down on West 4th? That's what's
close? Yeah, it's gone.
This is a really amazing place. I have to say, this CUNY School of Graduate School of Journalism is a gorgeous facility in the heart of Times Square. You're really in a great location. Those kids who are studying here are very, very lucky.
Next door to the Times. Yeah.
And man, look at this studio. Yeah, you've got a television studio. So thank you. And I really want to thank the guys. Was it George and who else?
Guys, say your names.
Sebastian.
I can't even see who's
our
behind.
Our camera operators.
Oh, over here?
Yeah. Oh, hey, Seti.
Oh, Seti. Hey, Seti.
Tim's back there.
Seti's a photographer.
Who else is back in the
control
room?
Camera.
Byron is in the
Byron.
Byron.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This is like, we got like a, like it's real TV.
Yeah, these are some serious lights.
Serious. Serious. So we thank you all.
I could stand for a little more heat from them, though.
It's chilly in here.
It's chilly. Yeah.
No, all studios. We like studios to be cold. And, of course, I have big NCAA March Madness CUNY basketball team. They're going all the way this year, I have a feeling. Hey, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do this week in Google, even in New York, around about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time. That's 20:30 UTC. You can watch live on Wednesdays. If you can't watch live, do get the audio or video. We offer every show on demand at our website. In this case, twit.tv/twig. And you can also subscribe on your favorite podcatcher or use one of those great Twit apps. There's lots of them. All of our third-party developers have created some great apps on every platform, including Roku and Apple. There's 5 Apple TV apps. We have a great newsletter. If you want to subscribe, it's free. We don't even put ads in it because who needs money? Twit.tv/newsletter if you'd like to subscribe. It's a double opt-in. We make sure that nobody can sign you up for it unless you really want it. But it'll let you know what's coming up on the week ahead on Twit. Thanks to Jason Kleanthis back in the studio for running the board, making things happen. Thanks to all of you for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.